Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Welcome to Weekend Confirmed. My name is Garnet Lee, and it is one weekend before E3, not even a whole week. You might even be listening to this on Monday as you're like between press conferences or watching streams, or I don't know what you might be doing, but that's why we're here, because we have an awesome E3 preparatory show for you. Ooh, preparatory show. It's an E3 preparation. That's Mr. Jeff Cannata to my left.
Two N's, one T. Glad to be back. And in fact, it was interesting. I didn't ever notice this. I am surprised that I didn't notice it, but you are two T's, one N, and I am two N's, one T. I didn't notice until you posted
Although
it.
I think I should be one N, two T's.
Yeah.
Two N's, one T?
Yeah.
One N.
Anyway, glad to be back.
And other sundry little things.
Enthralling conversation going on the other side of the room.
Spelling.
And Mr. Zav D'Amatos.
Hey, fellas, what's going on?
There you go. So big show coming up. We're going to get right into it because we have a ton of games. The in vogue PR move this year is to have rolling embargoes that lift the week before E3. I guess a lot of people wanted to get out of the way of stuff.
Yeah, it's real fun.
So there is a ton of stuff that I can tell you about. And these guys have also been playing The Witcher. So all you folks who are complaining.
They said it would never happen.
They said.
I am so deep into that game.
It could
crazy.
Never be done. Don't think twice about it. Then we also NGP stuff. We have an entire section set aside for NGP because I got to play several of the games and the hardware. I'll just like this up front, but we're not going to talk a ton. I will talk a little bit about the hardware because there's some like usability stuff we can talk about. But what we played on were all the developer kits. Mm. And so you're tethered, number one. And number two, the actual handheld part is more like, I guess industrial is the right way to use it, because they're not going to spend the money on like high dollar fit and finish plastics and metals for something that developers are just going to leave banging on their desks. Doesn't make any sense. But it does have the OLED screen.
That's important.
Fucking amazing. Pretty awesome. And then we got news. And before we do news, since you don't have it in news, there's a whole bunch of stuff that got added to streaming on Netflix, which you could get through your Xbox or your Wii or your PS3, including in that Mortal Kombat.
Is Annihilation in there? Because that's my favorite movie of all time.
Dude, I don't know. Like, it's all about the Paul Anderson one. You got to watch that one.
W.S. Anderson?
What? Yeah. Wes Anderson.
No, Bald.
I would love to see Wes Anderson do a Mortal Kombat movie.
No, not Wes
Anderson.
Isn't it Paul W.S. Anderson?
I don't know.
Yeah.
You're confusing me. Anyway, we went and saw it in a midnight showing like a month and a half ago. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. But even better now, you can go out and buy your own case of beer, have your little drinking game, because like that thing, there has to be, I'd like to know, there got to be drinking games for that.
Oh, I'm sure.
Have to be some fantastic drinking games for that. I submit your drinking games in the threads.
Whenever someone does a sweet front flip, oh. Drinking game, that's right. All you need.
So let's not make them wait. Let's go straight into The Witcher with a little preface of, did either of you play and or finish Witcher 1?
No.
I played the first one. I haven't finished it, though.
All right. So I've played the first one, but I've not finished it either. So with that in mind, how's Witcher 2?
You have gone a lot further than I have, Jeff. So
I'm on chapter 3.
Okay, so I'm not that far because it's been a hectic week. But one thing that strikes me, because I have played the first one, is they've changed the combat substantially. Now it is a action-focused, sort of combo-driven game. Mm-hmm. Still very tough, very, very tough game, even in the prologue. And the first game had this system where you would click your mouse and then your little icon would have a little flaming sword to know that you'd hit it again to do a combo. All of that's gone. Completely gone. Now it's an action game.
Are you playing with a controller or are you playing with a mouse and keyboard?
I was playing with a mouse and keyboard, and then I switched to controller just to see the difference. It's really comfortable with a controller.
I love it with a controller.
Yeah, well, like keep in mind, it. the first game was built on the Neverwinter Nights Aurora engine. Mm-hmm. So really, although it looked like an action game, you really were like, think like in the background, it was turn stepping through everything. And when you saw that little flash on your sword, that was literally like the moment in the next, you know, like as the turns are like, clocking off the cog, ticking off the cog.
Yeah, it was sort of like a ticking. It was like a roll of like, here's your crit. You have the ability to hit a critical.
That's now you've got like this full real time engine they built.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So real quick. Super gorgeous.
Yeah. Are you able to play on ultra settings on your
computer? Dude, yeah. My computer is pimp, sweet. All right? And yeah. I am rocking that shit.
Did you see his eyes light up there?
It's so good. Mitch Dyer reviewed it for us. He just built a brand new computer and reviewed it on Shaq News. And he played it on ultra settings. And all we did was talk about, after he wrote the review, I was like, can we just talk about how good looking this game is now?
Yeah.
And it scales really well, too, because Jeff Mattis, Indie Jeff, he plays it. His computer is pretty old, and he says he plays on low settings, and it looks really good.
Yeah.
The engine scales really well.
You know, if I'm going to have, you know, digital video game sex, I want it to look good.
And there's a lot of that. There's a lot of that. And it's, they show a lot. There's a lot of it. They show a lot of it.
Enough to embarrass you?
They show a scene, like the first scene is like him getting out of bed with a woman who's completely naked.
That's nothing. There's way more than that. There's like girl on top.
That's when the critical hits do come into play.
Nice.
And yeah, I mean, usually in the video game where the part where it would be fading out is they stay for another minute and a half.
Yeah.
What happens if you roll 00 during that?
Oh boy!
All right, be awful.
So we've mentioned that. Now we can move on. And
no,
talk
you
about
can't.
The game.
You can't just mention that and move on. That's the best part of the game. Come on, ask Duke. This is where Duke Nukem would come in. Duke thinks he's a badass because he gets a couple of girls giving him a blowjob at the beginning. That's nothing, right?
The Witcher's the man. He's pretty rad.
Geralt of Rivia, I believe. Is his full title.
Mm-hmm.
It says that on his business card, Witcher. Right.
See, it's funny
bottom.
That you pronounce. I always pronounced it Geralt when I was.
I think it's Geralt.
Is it Geralt?
But it doesn't.
The
Polish.
Internet will tell us, guys. Don't worry.
Let's talk about the combat a little bit because you brought it up. This is an interesting game in the sense that most games, you know, start easy and get hard. This game starts hard and gets less hard. As you become more powerful, you actually are able to dispatch enemies much more quickly and much more easily. But it's a steep learning curve because the very beginning of the game is really tough. And even in the prologue, they throw you into a battle and there's two or three guys. And if you engage two or three guys in this game, which, as you said, is a full third-person action engine that feels a lot like God of War, for example, or any of the other numerous third-person action games, wherein in those games you are routinely dealing with three or four different guys at a time and not having any problem.
Yeah.
In this game, should you do that at the beginning of the game, you will be killed.
Oh, yeah.
Often.
I played the first battle a handful of times.
Oh, me too. I think everybody I know that's played the game has.
I think maybe it's a story
because you
thing.
Wiped. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
But here's the interesting thing. You have projectiles, you have bombs, you have traps, and you have magic. Uh-huh. First of all, the magic system, I didn't play the first game, but the magic system is very different from any other kind of role-playing game I've played in that you don't have classic fireball, lightning bolt, freeze beam. Okay. You have these set of spells that you have, all of them save one, right at the beginning of the game, and you can make them more powerful, but they're all very utilitarian. They're all very...
They all serve a very specific purpose.
Exactly. And things that in other action games, in other role-playing games even, things that you would probably have as a secondary spell or something not as important, like a spell that basically serves as a trap, is very important in this game. And weighted heavily in how effective it is. So there's this learning curve of going, whereas in a lot of other games, you can choose to be the trap guy. You can choose to be, you know, the dude that throws grenades. But those are sort of like an oh shit button or, you know, for unusual circumstances.
You've been playing a lot of Dragon Age.
I have. Fucking A.
Which ascribes to that, I think. It has that oh shit button.
But you basically are smacking people over and over with your sword or mace or whatever. In this game, especially at the beginning...
You look more like you were tossing salad, by the way.
Don't even make puns. Especially at the beginning, these skills are essential for you to survive. You cannot survive without using them, which is interesting because the way you create those objects, grenades, potions, traps, which are all very essential, is through collecting resources,
yeah,
which makes resource gathering important.
It does. Here's the problem. Mm-hmm. The game gives you all of these tools. You start the game in the prologue and you can do all of these things. And they explain about 20% of them to you. You don't know you can do a lot of these things. Like, you, I didn't know how to use magic at first because it doesn't really explain it to you until after your first battle. And then you're like, that could have come in handy. Or, like, you pass by a resource and you can then pick it up. And after you pick it up, they're like, oh, by the way, you can do all this cool stuff. But if I'm playing the game and I'm one of those people who dislikes to walk past all that crap and not clutter my inventory because I don't know what it is, I might not know to pick all that stuff up. The game doesn't do a really great job in the beginning.
Okay, so let me ask you a question. Does it fall into camp A, which I'll call like the game expects you to bone the fuck up and just learn how to play it world, or camp B, where it's like, well, we're putting this stuff a little bit out of reach so that you have to work for it, and by working for it, you'll appreciate it and enjoy it that much more, and it'll bring you into the game.
Feels a little more camp A to me. It feels very old school in the sense that it doesn't hold your hand very much. Even in later, there's a lot of sequences that remind me of old school PC role-playing games where you'll be in long dialogue sections with guys and they're giving you lots of lore, lots of story points. And for the most part, in games that aren't L.A. Noire, you can just sort of sit back and let that stuff wash over you and get what you can out of
right.
it. But in this game, there'll be a quest later where the guy says, well, what did that guy tell you exactly? You know, who was the king of such and such? Who was the leader of the bandits? And you're like, oh, crap. I was supposed to be listening.
What is this, middle school reading retention?
Yeah. But I like that. I like that it doesn't have a flashing, you need to remember this, you need to remember this.
You know, I do mention that the game doesn't really teach you anything, but for some reason, I typically hate games that expect you to know all of its mechanics. But for this game, it didn't bother me. And I think it's because there is this great legacy of Eastern European developers who don't give a shit about holding your hand. It's not about that. It's about making something that you haven't seen before. Like, look at Metro 2033.
Yeah, it's another game that totally reminds me of.
You know what
I
mean? Yeah. Like, that is a game that it's like, it has all of these very strange mechanics, and you accept them or you don't, and they'll explain.
All of them serve to enrich the immersion into the world.
Exactly.
And so, such is the case here.
You know, fire a gun, but there you now have less ammo and you have less currency. You know what I mean? There's
your gas mask in certain situations.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think that this is the game where I was like, yeah, you know, you will eventually learn these things. You will eventually learn that, you know, oh, I'm supposed to do this to execute magic, or I'm supposed to pick up all these resources. But you do learn it over time. And I never got frustrated with the game not showing me everything. I don't necessarily need it to do that at all times.
Yeah.
Some games, I think, are infuriating because they don't show you certain aspects, because then you cannot progress.
Right.
But you can just as easily kill those guys with a sword swipe or
Well, you'll be doing a lot of rolling. And
yeah.
So not to be contrarian, but the explanation Zav's giving me is can't be.
What?
He's giving me
can't be.
He's giving me that explanation of...
Well, maybe different strokes for different folks.
That absolutely could well be, because how you approach the game and how you're feeling when you come into it is a big part of it. How is the, since the lore is so important and you have to get involved and engaged in it, how is the lore?
I find it to be really interesting and engaging. I did find myself comparing this game a lot to Dragon Age. I just played Dragon Age, so it's fresh in my mind. But it's that same sort of PC role-playing lineage that it subscribes to. And
they both gone action-oriented.
They have both gone action-oriented. I find this game superior to Dragon Age in almost every respect. I would say the character development in Dragon Age is superior. I like the story.
Player character development or narratively?
Both.
Okay.
Player character and surrounding supporting cast and being invested in those stories. Witcher has an interesting supporting cast, but I don't think any of them are as strong or interesting as the supporting cast in Dragon
Age.
But
because Witcher 2 is a sequel of a game that you did not play, and Dragon Age, although is a sequel, but it's a brand new character that you've never seen, do you think that that's why you have that feeling? Do you think that you don't have that connection and you don't really care about the narrative of that game? Because it starts off with this huge storyline of this is what happened that you didn't see.
Yeah, but I think the way they handle the characters in Witcher is less dynamic than how they handle the characters in Dragon Age. You find out so many more things about the characters in Dragon Age, and you generate relationships with each of them individually through their side quests. And at least at this point in Witcher 2, I don't have that feeling. I also feel like the voiceover acting in Dragon Age is much superior.
Well,
I think that can lend a lot to...
I hear what you're saying.
And specifically, it's the main character of The Witcher. And I bring this up because it reminds me of Harrison Ford. And early in his career, when he was Han Solo, he was awesome. Because Han Solo...
Dude, early in his career, he was in Apocalypse Now.
Well, that was his first role. But early in his career, he was playing Han Solo and Indiana Jones. And those characters had a whole range of vocal tone.
Right.
You know, I didn't like those guys anyway. Boring conversation anyway. Shoot the thing, right?
Right.
Nowadays, now that Harrison Ford has matured and decided that all he wants to ever do is talk in this gravelly voice, it's boring to listen to you. It's difficult to listen to him.
Yeah.
That's the same problem with the main character in The Witcher. Somebody told this guy that we needed the Witcher to sound a specific way, but yeah. Listen to that dude for 20, 30, 40 hours.
I blame Brooklyn.
Oy. Anyway.
You know what? You say that, and I'm thinking that you were going to have a rough time with Deus Ex Human Revolution.
Rut-row.
Yeah, because that character is sort of like that, too.
Anyway, there's a lot to like in this game.
I have a question about this voiceover thing, because yeah. Especially, like, I love it when we like talk about stuff that you have like acting perspective to bring to this. Is there a way to do that character intensity without coming off as gravelly voiced dude as you're describing him?
Oh, I definitely think so. I think you can name numerous masculine heavies over time
like,
in
are you good
film.
With,
and
are you good with Old Snake?
Yeah. He's sort of comedically wry,
okay.
he's so far over the edge of that thing that's the point.
I apologize for interrupting then, so give me a couple ones you think that have nailed it.
Oh god, you're gonna put me on the spot. Gravelly god, there are I feel like the main character of Mass Effect is
well, Garrus in Mass Effect.
Yes,
you know, Garrus has sort of that very dry gravelly voice, but he, you know, the major difference I see is that we were talking about this about L.A. Noire. It's like you can really tell the difference now in games whereas you can't tell in movies, where these people are filming or recording their lines of dialogue and they're not near the other actor. Yeah. Like, look at something like Uncharted, where they, you know, actually go and act out the scenes.
I was about to say, they do a whole soundstage.
They do the whole soundstage, and you can tell because there is this presence of everyone's around you, so you're playing off of other people.
Well, especially if it's, like, physical, you even have the breathing that comes into it.
Sure.
I mean,
right.
Like, if you're watching someone exert themselves trying to climb a cliff or come over the top of a pass or, like, whatever they're doing, like, well, pulling themselves up into a boxcar, there's an exertion that goes with it, and having that same exertion means you have, like, the same breathing, the same meter, the same, you know, it just presents the same way.
Yeah,
it's really hard to duplicate that just, you know, standing cold in a sound box.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
But Witcher 2, you're enjoying the hell out of it.
Enjoying the hell out of it. There is not a perfect game by any stretch. To wrap up the conversation,
what the fuck did you just say?
To wrap up the conversation about the combat system, I actually found myself really liking the fact that it forced me to use skills that I in most RPGs would ignore.
Yeah.
But by the time I'm halfway through chapter 2, my guy is so powerful, I've gotten the ability to do finishing moves where I can kill 3 guys at once, that all of a sudden it's, oh, I don't need that anymore. And that's kind of sad until...
it catches back up to you.
Until the boss fights. And the boss fights are just ridiculously annoying.
Really?
And it's too bad. Because over and over... did you do the Kayran boss fight yet?
No.
See, that's the first one. And it's annoying. It's it's instant death. Myriad ways and QTEs in weird places.
Yeah.
And if you miss a QTE, it's start the boss fight over, even though there's 3 stages of the boss. And
oh,
then,
Christ sakes, really?
Yeah. And then the second boss fight is Letho, and that's just a regular fight, but he's just ridiculously overpowered. And the third boss fight is the Drog, and it's ridiculous. And all of them, it's just like, it's a headache.
Yeah,
a chore.
That's where I think, where I said before, it doesn't bother me because, like, this Eastern Bloc has a legacy of games sort of the same ilk of design philosophy. This is where I'm going to have an issue with it, I think.
Yeah. But
why do games that have such interesting character development and rich layers of combat then feel like they have to go back to, oh, we're going to have the big boss, and the big boss is like this sort of...
It happens everywhere. Ask BioWare. Mass Effect 2 is the final boss. You fight T-1000.
Which I've railed against a million times.
Yeah.
Hmm. But there's a few things I want to mention.
Before you leave combat,
yeah.
because the one thing I have gotten to... like, so about 3 months maybe before the game came out, you might remember we talked about it when I had gone and played the game, and one of the things they wanted to show off was the combat. And what came through to me, and this is probably just maybe a different way of saying it, is that I loved that when fighting groups, it wasn't a everybody lined up and took their turns to fight you kind of thing.
Definitely not.
So you had to really think about what you were doing.
Yeah.
And I kept noticing that it was very important. Like, it kind of also ties back to like dungeon crawls, because I'm back to in my free time, I'm like, for some reason, decided I wanted to finish up my Torchlight XBLA playthrough, because I love that game. Mm-hmm. But like anytime you play those games, like especially when you get later levels, you get those like, you know, like where they like have a mini boss who's like the healer guy with lots of minions around him. Mm-hmm. And so you have to figure out getting to the mini boss, except you're like looking at top down. And I felt like Witcher was doing the same thing to me, where like every time I came into a fight in this demo, I had to identify, okay, those guys are going to hit me this way, but I can hold them off for a little while. These guys over here, super, like, they could take me down, except if I don't get this guy back here, then it's not really going to matter. So I was like prioritizing targets and moving.
Oh, it's awesome. I love, in fact, I came away from this game going, maybe I would like Demon's Souls, because it's hard and it's frustrating.
Cheer just went up from the crowd,
and I get frustrated easy,
but the
really
reward
quickly.
The reward for succeeding is, you know, exponential, because this is a very tough experience. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's not the hardest
game
in the
like
world.
Demon's Souls.
You know what I mean? And Demon's Souls obviously isn't the hardest game in the world, but I mean, these are games that, you know, Western design philosophy really holds your hand to try to get you to the next level so you can buy their DLC or some shit. And, you know, I think that this is something that I think a lot of developers, I'm glad, for example, Metro Last Light is not cutting all of that, those mechanics out. One thing I will say though, to your point, Garnet, is, in the beginning, I thought, man, it's going to be great because I can use all these tactics around all these people. But then it becomes, when do I roll out of the way? And then there's a couple of fights where it's the same kind of enemies, and then you're rolling out of the way. But
everyone can't roll, though, right? It depends on what you're equipped.
No, you can roll.
Witcher can roll like a
rolling motherfucker.
He rolls like a mofo.
Oh, you know what? I'm thinking. Yeah, you got me on Darks. I was actually thinking.
Oh, you're thinking of Dark Souls.
I was thinking of Dark Souls. Yeah.
Yeah. No. So you, in the beginning of Witcher, I was like, I could just, they're about to swing at me, I'll just roll all the way and hit them. But then later, when you start to get paired, they start getting paired up with other guys that have more armor and shields. Then you're like, okay, I got to hit this guy with lightning so he kind of crumbles down and gets shocked, and then kill these two guys while he's not attacking me, and then go back to him and try to shock him again so I can get behind him. There's a lot of those little tactics. I don't want people to get the wrong idea, though. I don't think that it's like God of War level type of action. It is more, it feels like there's more weight to everything. God of War makes it feel you can like swing this huge.
But it's set up that way.
Yeah.
Ostensibly. It's set up where, you know, mapping wise to buttons, it's set up that way, and you can dodge quickly just like those kinds of games. You just can't play it that way, or you will
die. You're talking specifically about the controller, playing on controller.
But, certainly. That's how I, yeah, certainly. I would all, a couple other criticisms. Stealth in the game, which you have to do in several sections, is pretty shitty and not fun. And the map is almost entirely useless. It's really ridiculous. In a game that requires you to know where you're going and use the map all the time, it's beautiful, but it's not useful.
That's a lot of frustration just for the map. What's wrong with the map?
But wasn't your criticism of Dragon Age 2 that you felt that the map gave you too much information? And you were just like, okay, now I have to go here, now I have to go there?
Oh, I don't mean the map. I don't mean from an information-wise. I mean from a – I don't even get – how to walk through here by looking at the map. I can't tell where I am in relation to something else on the map. Certain levels are better than others, but overall, it's bad map design. It takes too many steps to get to the map.
So is it
from
an interface thing? I'm really not understanding.
Yeah, it's how the map is drawn and what it shows you on the map as far as pathways to get places.
Okay, so it's obscured. But is it trying to be like super stylistic?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's all, and also it takes three or four steps to get to it. You should be able to get to it on a button. It's necessary to get around, but it's difficult and unwieldy and not useful.
If it was Kinect, you could just reach over to the side
and
pull your map out of your pocket.
They are patching the game tomorrow, and it allows for key binding, so you might be able to just bind it to a button now.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah. A couple of other things I want to mention, and
I'd like you guys out there listening to note that Jeff brought notes.
I brought notes.
He likes this game so much. He brought notes.
These are the kind of games that I play video games for. I'm in a world. It's rich. It's interesting. It's gorgeous. There's stories. The wonderful thing about Witcher 2 is almost any time you can go somewhere off the beaten path, you will be rewarded for it. Maybe a small reward, maybe a big reward, but you'll find something. It's a really well-built world.
That I appreciate.
A couple of things I want to mention that may be minorly spoilery. So if you want that warning, here it is. I just want to mention some stories, because you love hearing stories
I love hearing stories about playing.
So here, that's why I wrote some of these down. I took a quest. I don't know if you've done this one yet. I took a quest where I ended up drinking with a bunch of people, and I had a hangover. And when I woke up, I had a tattoo on my neck of a naked girl.
What?
That I have for the rest of the game.
Oh my God, that's awesome!
Isn't that great?
That is awesome.
Like. Every close-up, in every dialogue sequence, there's freaking tattoo on my neck.
So it fully becomes part of your character, even in the cut. My God, dude, that is freaking
isn't that great?
Awesome.
That sounds like CD Projekt Red's sense of humor coming straight through the game.
There's another thing I
that
wrote
is
down.
That is genius.
There's another thing I wrote down that I love this kind of sense of humor, that this is a dialogue moment. The guy's like, he's like, I'm a witcher. He's like, oh, good, I have some problems I hope you can help me with. And he goes, well, what kind of problems? He's like, well, my friend's missing. He's like, well, did you find his entrails strewn on the porch and his head a few paces away? Because that's the kind of problems I solve.
Nice. That's so awesome. Don't be troubling me, buddy.
That's great.
Your problems are not badass enough.
And there are wonderful little touches. You see the armor is all very interesting and really detailed. You see everything that you equip on your character, including trophies. You get these trophies from slaughtering bad guys that give you bonuses. And he has a hook on the back of his backpack.
What?
That you stick a trophy on. So it'll be like this piece of flesh or a claw from a thing you killed.
Dude, that is the biggest.
So badass.
That is the biggest bitch slap to Fable. Because remember, like, Fable, yeah. you'd have the head of something, you'd, pull a button to pull it out of your backpack and hold it up, and people would go, yay, very
and
good,
now
the
fart.
Hero. And now you're walking around, you're like, yeah, I got this bloody stump on a hook
it's
on the
so
back.
It's so badass, dude. It's so
cool here all the time.
Seeing those things,
do people freak out on
role-playing games. No, I haven't seen anybody mention anything, but you get a bonus, and it's always there, like, waggling as you walk. It's awesome. There's a king who has this belt that looks like his castle. It's such awesome little touches.
He's the hip hop gamer king.
Yeah,
he's like, I got my belt right here.
I don't know if this was
Does
the case.
It spin the front of it spins. No,
it should be. It's spinning, baby. It's spinning.
It's awesome.
I don't know if this was the case in the first game, but evidently The Witcher has this buddy who's a bard, who's sort of a ladies' man, who is going around with him, writing down all his exploits. And so your quest journal is written from the point of view of the bard talking about what you've done.
No, that's cool.
So reading your quest log is actually fun because it's written like a narrative. Like, oh, then the Witcher saw this stuff. He didn't know what he was going to do next. And it's like, okay, I'm at that point in the quest because I don't know what I'm going to do next. And then you do the next thing and he's like, of course he went and killed the vermin. That's what the Witcher does. It's like, it's writing you like a badass.
Have you played or seen Bastion?
No, but I can't wait for that game. It looks awesome.
And it does. You realize that Bastion,
oh, yeah, it does that in voiceover.
It narrates the whole thing. And and I was trying to tell people last week, it's fucking badass. And they're all like, I don't know. I don't know if I want to listen. I'm like, dude, trust me. It is really cool. It is really cool.
Yeah, I am loving The Witcher. I am so, so hooked on that game. There's so many great moments. There's a moment where you have to draw the symbol. And it doesn't tell you how you were supposed to find out how to draw it. You just have to figure it out, kind of like L.A. Noire does.
Yeah.
It's got that sense of humor. There's a sequence where you go out in the woods and you take peyote to prove to this dude that you're one of his guys. And you wake up and you have this dream where there's this giant chicken chasing you. Like, crazy awesome adventures.
All right. You love loving things and you love loving The Witcher.
Yeah.
I'm going to love loving The Witcher. God, I can't wait to play this game. The most... horrible timing to come out right before E3. I mean, there's so much that's come out right before E3. And we still have some of those games to talk about. Like, you're going to talk a little bit about Red Faction when we come back on the other side. We still have a whole ream of stuff that I've got that came off of Embargo.
Big stuff.
And we've got NGP. We've got a ton of stuff. So stick around. We will be right back on the other side. Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from ShackNews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 8,000 games. New version 2.0 for the iPhone and iPod Touch includes cool new features like social interaction. Now you can follow and interact with the crew from Weekend Confirmed in the Gamefly app. Check out what Jeff Cannata, Del Rio, and I are playing and saying about the latest games. And as always, the app is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
Is that a game flap
that's
ad I heard?
Hey, you know what? Speaking of that app, a whole lot of you are reading your game news through that app. And over E3, we are going to be hardcore out there hitting it for you guys. And we're going to be using, if you're on the iPhone, where we now have like that social thing built in, we started an account for Shaq News, and we will be running into there like our quick comments on everything that we're seeing on the show floor as we're seeing it. We'll be doing all of the press conferences that way as well. And of course, ShaqNews.com. I've been laboring over the schedule like crazy, and we got a ton of great stuff. As a matter of fact, also, if you haven't had a chance, come by Shaq News and welcome Andrew Yoon to the fold. He's our new East Coast editor. Zab's former compatriot.
Also formal.
We do dress in tuxes, yeah.
Top hat and a monocle.
We're taking this bitch over.
That's right. It's going to be the Shaq News with the cube. But we can't do it with the cube because then it's all messed up. Yeah. Anyway. All right. And also coming up in the music break, we have the Beat Bullies, Southern California's own hip-hop group with, what do we have from them? All On My Own. So all that's coming up. All right. So you see my list. Where should I start?
Batman,
dude. Oh my God. Batman was like the first thing we saw during Judges Week. And like, it's funny, like there's the Warner Brothers, like everybody asks you after it. So how was it? And my response is like, you know, the weird thing is that like Batman was so good as a debut game from Rocksteady. You're like, who the hell are these guys? Mm-hmm. How did they solve making such an awesome, awesome comic book hero movie, a game? And when are they going to do next? And so then you go into this and you're like, it's got to be awesome. It's got to be awesome. And I almost was concerned that, you know, people's expectations are going to be so high. It's going to be really, don't worry. It more than lives up to expectations. It's insane how awesome the game is.
Is there stuff that you can't talk about?
No.
Okay. So you can talk about Catwoman.
Yeah. No, that's out. Yeah. So Catwoman's out. First of all, the most amazing, liberating feeling of blowing open the environments, because the one thing about Batman, while it was a really great controlled experience, was it was sort of a controlled experience.
Yes.
In that you could see places around the asylum and you knew, I know I'm going to go over there, mm-hmm. but I'm going to get there the way the designer wanted me to get there. And then I'm probably not going to come back here because that route is going to be closed off to me.
And it was always a tease to look out in the skyline and see like the Wayne building. Right. And, yeah. So now it's totally different.
The opening to this demo is like a sky shot of Gotham. And, you know, so for those who don't know, that what happened is that part of Gotham has been turned into a jail / insane asylum to house all of the escapees. Well, I guess not really escapees, but to house all the criminals and insane criminals that were in the asylum. But now in like a section of Gotham that's been carved out, which is hence the name, it's Arkham City. And it's patrolled along the walls by a security force called... I can't remember. I should remember it. Damn it. Sorry, guys. Anyway, so they open and they show this sky shot, and it's like the skyline. You can see all these buildings, and it's dark, and you're like, wow, this is really cool. And on the horizon is the asylum. And the first thing the game director says is that, so that's the asylum over there, and the game world that we have for you to play in now is a little over 5 times the size of that, and it's all open.
Awesome.
I'm like,
and you can fly.
Wow. And then he like points to like this small spot on the screen, and the camera comes in, and it's fucking Batman sitting on top of this like ledge on top of a building, like looking down over it. And like the sense of
there's
scale.
There's totally a gargoyle there too.
Of course. I was trying to not put the gargoyle in there. I was trying not to be too cliche, because the gargoyle was unimportant. Like, here's Batman, and he's like this little dude, and then they like come in on it. It's like the sense of scope and scale was absolutely freaking fantastic. Like, I think that although we knocked it for a number of other things, one thing I remember about Prototype was when you were Alex Mercer, like going around the buildings, like you really got that sense of scale in New York City, right?
Yeah.
Same thing here. Absolutely. It's totally got that in spades. It's like he's up there and you realize that like the ground is 15, 20 floors below you, and it is 15, 20 floors below you.
Awesome.
Absolutely spectacular.
Let me ask you this question. At GDC, when they showed it to us, they were like, oh, yeah, you know, you'd only ever fight like 4 or 5 guys at a time in the other one. There's going to be much bigger fights. And then they showed a room with like 50 dudes in it.
Yep.
And then Batman dropped in and
like yep. all of them run
all
away.
All of them left.
Yeah, except for 4 or 5 dudes. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, well, wait.
So little bit later on in this demo, when you were off to rescue Catwoman,
mm-hmm.
you had to break into this church that has been turned into Two-Face's lair, and he's got her trussed up by her feet, and he's about to drop her into a vat of acid. Of course, it's Two-Face,
mm-hmm. yeah.
and he's got all his henchmen down there, and you like jump in, and like he is still there, and actually you wind up like kind of like, well, I don't want to spoil things anyway,
doing something,
yeah, and. But the fight that ensues on the ground floor is you with, like, I would probably say 15, like right. a dozen, 15 of his henchmen fighting all at the same time. And it's pretty, I mean, if you know the Batman system of fighting, it's really fun because you move around real quickly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's very
counters,
like,
and yeah.
it's very like punch, but counter that still has like the same tells with the lightning bolts over their heads.
Right.
Still has the like disarm moves where you like, if someone comes out with a baseball bat and you get the counter right, you pull the baseball bat away from them and then smack them down with it. It still takes
actually,
a little while.
That, isn't that the new part where you can actually take the weapons away from them?
Could you not do that the first game?
I don't think you could.
Jesus, it felt so natural in this. I figured it had to have been there before.
That was the revelation of the first game.
In the first game, you can like take it away from them and drop it, but I think in this one, you can actually take it and use it against them.
Yeah, this one, you take it and you like flip it around and like just smack the fuck out of them with it. It's super satisfying.
The demo that you actually got to play is actually the one that we saw at GDC, so it sounds like they changed it because the courthouse that's like half Two-Face and half normal... that has like it's split apart. That was the room where he breaks in, and there's like 30 guys in there, and they all run out. So it sounds like they did change that one part.
Huh? It could well be because it wasn't a normal courthouse. It was a courthouse, but it wasn't like half normal or anything.
It was half of it was burnt. Yeah. It was like Two-Face.
I see what you're saying.
So the way you get around through the city is that Batman has his grappling hook gun, and he uses his grappling hook gun to like fire, and it seemed like I played around with it a lot just running around the city, and it was pretty friendly with what I could grapple to. Like, there was not a lot of that like, oh, hunting to try and get the cursor to light up bullshit. Mm-hmm. It was pretty much like just aim up at a ledge. It must be doing some sticky shit because it was pretty easy, just like aim at a ledge, pop, fire, and go. And then
that's awesome.
And then once you get, and a zip is really fast and it accelerates really quickly. Like, so once you have that thing clipped onto something and it pulls you up, it accelerates you really strong so you can let go, pop the cape, and start sailing. And so you can start doing this chaining
sailing.
Thing.
Batman sailing.
Soaring, whatever.
No, it's cool. He's all like,
it was
Batman yacht club.
Did you play Spider-Man 2?
Yes.
It has that feeling.
That's awesome.
Sounds like Just Cause 2.
It's very much like Just Cause
2. Not terrible.
Yes.
Just Cause 2 is not terrible. You are wrong. You're so wrong. Just Cause is going to take the Just Cause out of you.
I'm sure it will.
Damn it.
Just why though? Just cause.
Just cause.
Nice.
That was his joke the whole time. Why? Just cause.
Just cause.
Anyway,
it sounds like exactly what I wanted from Assassin's Creed with the freaking.
Oh, dude, it feels so good.
Yeah.
What's this guy's name?
Leonardo da Vinci.
Oh.
Wings.
Yeah. I liked how you were like flapping.
I was doing
your wings.
Them.
You're like,
look, guys,
I'm
who's
doing
this?
The wings.
Yeah. Great
doing
for
wings.
Radio. Jeff is so currently flapping wings.
Then you add in the Catwoman element. And the thing that's kind of cool about the Catwoman element is that they're bringing her in. I like the way they described her as like a special guest role.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's totally playable. And it's amazing to me they would spend as much time as they have obviously spent on her for someone that they say is like 10% of the game. She's a fully realized character. She's not just a Batman reskin.
That's great.
She doesn't have like skills like he has. She's much different. Like when she fights, she does not fight with as much oomph. But she's much more acrobatic. She does a lot of,
awesome.
Like, if you've watched the trailer where she's, like, spin flipping and, like, doing, like, bicycle kicks and shit, she totally does that when she fights. She's very
insane.
Quick.
Insane. It looks awesome, man.
She's very lithe, very quick on her feet, and then she has these claws. And the claws give her the ability to, like, go up the wall and then onto the ceiling.
Sweet.
So she can crawl around on the ceiling. Now, the trade-off is she doesn't have detective view.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really makes game. I mean, especially if you were one of those guys who like leaned on detective view all the time. Keep in mind that when you're playing her, it's going to be a little more tough,
mm-hmm.
which is a good thing. I think she has like a thief view because when you play her, her conceit for like her part of the game is that so everything's gone nuts inside the Arkham City, and her deal is like she's using the chaos to sneak into the lairs of all the other criminals and steal the loot that they stole.
Brilliant. Classic Catwoman.
Isn't it? It's kind of classic Catwoman. So that's how she wound up in trouble with Two-Face, by the way, obviously. And, you know, of course, Batman, like, he has, like, that
So are weird... her levels more stealthy?
Her level, yeah. So one of the levels they showed was she was infiltrating a vault room, and so she, keep in mind, like, now she's doing stealth and like trying to do stealth takedowns, but she doesn't have detective view, so she actually has to like monitor those guys and watch them. And what she would do is like stay up in the shadows of the ceiling, and then drop when one got isolated, get behind him, take him down, and get back to the ceiling before the other patrolman would get there. The thing that was cool was that I think a lot of those times those feel really contrived, and in this case, like if she dropped. And, like, as soon as she hit the guy, he'd, like, scream out and others would start coming running. So you had to really be quick with, like, the takedown and get back to the ceiling. Hmm. It was one of those deals where you're, like, watching the guy doing the demo and you're like, okay, I would probably die once or twice here. I mean, mm-hmm. I could get through it. I could do it. But I'm not going to nail this the first time. I could see where it takes a little, like, learning. But it didn't look brutal. It didn't look awful. You know, it wasn't like I was going to, like, kill myself over it. Yeah. But it was definitely tough. It's definitely tough.
Man, I'm excited for that game.
And you were mentioning also that the way that she traverses the world is very different because she doesn't have a grappling hook.
Right. So she uses her whip, and her whip is really cool. So the thing about it, so the Batman's grappling hook gun like goes pretty long range. If he's on the top of like a normal downtown block, he can hit a building across the street and down maybe half a block. So mm-hmm. he gets pretty good range with his grappling gun. She, however, uses a whip. And she does the same thing of like whipping and grabbing and yanking and then like pulling herself forward. But it's like, it's just a whip. Mm-hmm. So that's the entire distance of what she has. It'd get her maybe, I don't know, 20 feet.
Yeah.
So she has to like be much more conscientious, especially in outdoor situations, of like, where's the next ledge? Where's the next spot that I'm going to? But again, she has the claws.
Yeah.
It's a really cool trade-off.
It's cool, man.
Very cool.
You got trade-off. Like so many other amazing games on your list. Maybe we should talk. I want to hear about Journey.
Oh, dude. I could go on and 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 on about Journey. That is, so last week I got to go to Santa Monica Studios and play Journey, and it was really cool because they let us just sit down. Well, we talked to Genovo Chen for a little bit, and he sort of just lays out like, you know, the idea behind it, and then we just got to play it for like an hour. And I told him then the same thing I'll say right now, which is I'm not going to tell you very much about the game because I literally had one of those super awesome...
You told
awesome...
Genova I'm not going to tell you much about the game?
No.
I don't want to spoil anything for you, Genova.
No, what I was saying is I don't know how to cover this for you because I want people to be excited about it, but I don't want anybody to know anything that would prevent them from having... that aha moment that I had playing this game.
That's all you need to say.
Which is an important part of...
You had me at aha.
And like...
aha and Journey on a tour. Amazing.
You know what I mean? Like, I literally...
That's
like,
a double bill I'd go to.
It's really uncommon even anymore. And it's purely in the creativity of this is one of those games that doesn't give you a lot of information up front either. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of the things he said is
but
like...
But that's kind of the thing about it, right?
That's kind of the thing about it. And there's an important core mechanic that they don't really spend a lot of time explaining, but you get it over time by playing around in the world. And when it comes all together, like, I don't know if it'll happen for everybody. When it came all together, I just was like, fucking awesome. I was just like... blah, wow, that's like so cool. I'm like, I put all the pieces together. I was like, so that does, and that, oh, that's
blah,
really
wow, so cool.
Cool.
Garnet Lee, Shaq Nation.
So how do you communicate that to people?
Yeah,
because
you just did.
It's like, the things that are amazing about it is you get this incredible sense of vista. You know, if you've seen some of the screens, they almost don't even do it justice. There are times when you're like adventuring through this world, and they've only shown desert levels.
As I was going to say, so it does seem beautiful and not plain, because they seemed a little sparse.
It's not. Okay. There are ruins that you come upon, and one thing that Genova said was that in later levels you won't be in the desert.
That's
he
good.
Didn't say where you'll be, because of course, like that's an important thing is to not disclose like that sort of stuff. But it does, you know, Journey is the name of the game, and Journey is what you'll be doing in the game. It is all about this character's journey to this, like, I guess it's almost supposed to be like a mystical pilgrimage sort of thing that you're on, and I hesitate to say much more than that. It controls beautifully. One of the things he said is that, you know, this was, we wanted to do a platformer. And we knew, so it's kind of interesting the way they approach design. It's like, well, we knew that at some point in time we wanted to do a platformer sort of mechanically. But when they sit down to design games, they don't think about what they want to make as a game. They think about what kind of emotions they want to get people to have.
That's,
I'm like, I love you guys.
Yeah, that's what you want. You want somebody in the marketplace doing that.
To aspire, yeah. right? And mm-hmm. so, and they pull it off so, oh my God, it's so amazing. It's like so engrossing. So they've sort of changed up the thing a little bit. You know, originally the design document was it be four people potentially in a world. It's now just you and one other person. Mm-hmm. How that one other person, so if you can play the game entirely by yourself. If you play the game while you're logged in to the PlayStation Network, then by happenstance, it might connect you to another person who's playing the game and is in the same part of the world as you are. And keep in mind, it doesn't have your name over there.
Can you choose to play with a friend?
No. It's right, not about that.
Because communication with them is handled in a unique way too, right?
What communication? Communication is all extemporaneous. It's mm-hmm. it's like, what do you do? Like,
yeah.
Like there's sort of a way to like gesture and make some sounds and stuff, but there's not like even, I mean, this is not Portal 2. You're not standing there like waving your hands.
It's
and
more
shit
like
at each other.
Yorda is an actual person. Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a very good way to put it. I mean, obviously it's channeling a lot of eco vibe, right? Yeah. I mean, it's definitely got that. It definitely has that. And what I found was really interesting was, you know, playing and not knowing who you're playing with and not having any communication, it's a very strange sort of relationship, because you start off, you're like, well, okay, there's another person there. That's obviously another real person. There's no AI. Do I go over where they are, or do I just keep doing my thing? Hmm. And then if they come over and start playing with me, do I like that? Do I want them hanging out with me? Is that cool? Or
am I just liking this?
It's really weird, right?
You're like, did you get a sense of this because you went and you didn't have that because you knew who, were you playing co-op at all?
You don't know who you're playing with.
Right, but
although I was playing at Sony Santa Monica and there were other people demoing at the same time, there were testers that were playing down in San Diego as well and testers playing at other Sony offices, and we could have any one of us been matched together because they don't even have any way to control that. It's all just doing it in the back end. Like, crazy. It's like saying, oh, this person's here, this person's here. I think that the person I played with was potentially an experienced tester, because once we sort of felt each other out and they watched me like run around and do some other stuff, they sort of signaled me a couple of spots that showed me
like
some
they
things.
They knew some shit.
Yeah, like they knew some things, but they weren't like, but it wasn't pushy. And then like when I wanted to go do my own thing, it was really easy to just kind of detach and go, well, I'm gonna go over here and do my thing.
I mean, I could tell you also that when he came back from his meeting, he was super excited about it too. And you're still super excited. I think though that you're talking around it so much that if people don't know what Journey is, they have no idea.
I think
what
we
you're
should keep moving. We should just move on.
I think that's fine. I know
fine.
You don't want to ruin the experience.
It's
but
a
I
pilgrimage
just,
adventure yeah. game. We play a character. If you play online with other people, well, if you play online, other people may or may not come into your game, mm-hmm. and it has the mystical magic of the eco game.
I think that's all you need to say. Like, I don't need to know everything about this game. I'm sold. I'm ready.
And then I would say, look at screenshots, but don't read any more about it.
Yeah, that's what I will endeavor to do.
Because it's really going to be fantastic.
Unless it's on checknews.com.
What's another one that you want to talk about? These are all amazing.
I want to hear about Metro Last Light, because I did read your preview, but I do want you to go into a little bit more detail.
Well, and one of the things that Zab pointed out to me is that my problem with Metro Last Light is that I didn't play Metro 2033.
Oh. You played it. I played it, right?
Yeah.
You played it. Yeah.
So love Metro.
I played it up to the point where a glitch.
Your gas mask thing. Yeah, yeah. I remember hearing about
but
that.
But I liked it a lot up to that point.
You played it on 360, right?
Yeah.
Why do you grimace? I mean, was it competent other than the glitch?
Oh, it was great.
I still thought I might try it on 360.
I was grimacing because I hit that glitch and I couldn't move on from there and I didn't want to start over.
I mean, listeners know how long I've been talking about needing a new computer. They're probably like completely fed up with that.
So. Do you have $5,000?
You are not John Davison. John Davison will be here next week and then we can make that joke.
I miss working with John.
So then I'll tell you some of the things that they did. I'll give you the way they laid out the presentation because it'll probably be even more interesting than just the preview was. One of the first things they did was they did a fly-through picture of Moscow. And one of the things they were like emphasizing is that the world is coming back to life. It's coming out of its toxicity. It's going to be a place that's inhabitable by humanity again. Mm-hmm. However, the like wyvern demon dragony things are still there as well. Mm-hmm. And you still can't spend that much time outside. So you still have the, like, when you're outdoors, especially, you still have like the ammo, light, and air thing that you have to really watch out for. Mm-hmm. That said, the big setup for the game is that humanity is starting to emerge out of the metro, and instead of the stations, which were like the little mini city states, instead of them uniting and like, you know, trying to bring humanity back, there's like a big civil war that's erupting, mm-hmm. and you're thrust into the middle of this. And they didn't exactly say how, because like then what they wanted to show with the with the demo was a bunch of pieces of its of they took a bunch of pieces of levels and stitched them together into like an amusement park ride.
Right. Yeah.
And like I told Zab, I'm pretty sure what they wanted to do was like slap any 360 games that have done like big cinematic demos. Modern Warfare.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, obviously.
Because the game's not going to be like that.
Well, and on a high-end PC, dude, nothing holds a candle to this thing. Yeah, the visuals on it are ridiculous. We flew into like a metro access tunnel, and then now we're with the character. The character goes down the ladder. And now they're in this metro tunnel, and they're doing an infiltration to go into this one city's rail yard area or whatever in the underground. And there's a patrol coming down. And first of all, once we got into the dark, the shift in lighting was dramatic. Now it is fucking dark. It is serious dark, and you see these flashlights, just the flashlights coming down the tunnel towards you. And the way the cone of light coming out of the flashlight and where the beam was hitting, and then the diffusion of dust and crap just in the light, so freakily atmospheric. And I guess one of the big complaints of the first game or Metro 2033 was the stealth parts were bad.
I mean, it was never. I mean, the game itself, if you ever got spotted and you got into combat situations, you're that's dead. Where the game kind of broke apart. Yeah.
Okay. So what he did here was it was really easy to see where these guys were searching and they moved really erratically. But once they moved on, it was easy also for him because it was so damn dark to sneak up behind them and take them out one at a time. He goes into another area then he sneaks into their little mini camp, mini main base. It's like a train yard. There's a big shootout. So he's showing off, the guys moving, and their AI on their enemies is pretty competent. You got guys flanking, you got guys drawing back. It was definitely a good firefight. It moves on to a later place where I guess there's a big fascist movement also in the world.
Mm.
And so you and your partner are have been somehow gotten in the middle of their world, and you're trying to escape. So you're he winds up, he's disguised walking through a fascist rally with the leader. It looked very very evocative of Nazi Germany, with this guy leader talking about these two guys, we got to catch up with them. And then he spots you, and the next thing you know, this big chase is on, and you're being chased by all these soldiers through the underground. So I think they were trying to show that they're doing some more dramatic stuff. And then they had a big rail car thing to at the climax of it. And but the funny thing was, at the end of all that, they're well, we're not a running gun shooter. So that was a little confusing.
Well, it sounds like if they're running away, it's more about survival rather than actually trying to kill everyone that's on the chase, right? The whole concept and the core of the theme of the game is human survival, survival of humanity, right? I mean, that's what Metro 2033 was all about.
Yeah, and it certainly was not a run-and-gun shooter.
No, and even if it wanted to be, it wasn't competent enough to do it.
So a few of the things they emphasized were that they were not going to attempt to they were going to stick to the Eastern European approach.
Awesome.
Not going to try and westernize it any, not going to make it an easy to find ammo sort of shooter, not going to take away from the stuff the gas masks breaking, even if you get glitched. Sorry about that.
But
they wanted to keep all of those things, but that one of the things that they did appreciate was that they needed to be more technically competent in the execution of the game. So they're going back to the drawing board, both on, mechanically sound, making it, glitch free, and then also tuning things like AI systems and physics on the guns and physics on the way you move through the environments.
It's a really interesting world and a different enough experience that I'll be excited to revisit that series.
You want a real different experience? You know what I saw just after that?
What's that?
Saints Row the Third.
All right.
That is a different experience.
Different in what way?
Different in the way of instead.
In the way of, well, that's different.
Oh, different in the way of the very first thing that he showed you was, how in Grand Theft Auto, a lot of times, especially in the older ones, you ran around with a baseball bat in your hand, beating the crap out of dudes.
Yeah.
Imagine a baseball bat handle with a 3.5-foot purple dildo on it.
I'd rather not.
That's what you go around beating the hell out of people with.
It's so interesting to me, right? Grand Theft Auto 3 comes out, does something completely new.
Yeah.
And there's two directions that you can go from that.
Yep.
One of them is the direction that Rockstar's games have gone.
Yep.
And the other is Saints Row.
What, right? You don't like your purple dildo bat?
No.
Really? No?
No, but they're a great indie band.
If you PDD?
Yeah.
PDB?
How about like a giant Paco fist that you put on, and when you hit people with it, it makes them explode like a tomato into a big bloody mess?
There was a moment where Grand Theft Auto 4 came out, and they talked about how we're not going to have Niko Bellic do all of these like sky jumping or base jumping or skydiving things because we want it to be more found and realistic. It's like they threw all that stuff in the trash, and then Volition was like,
"Oh my god, look what these guys threw in the trash! this is perfectly useful stuff here."
That is the most brilliant description I think I have ever heard.
You know what I mean?
Row.
It's like they took it to a certain point where they're like, "This is good, but what would happen if we turned the crazy up to 11?" Oh. You know what I mean?
It's like, hey, Volition.
The first game starts with you being completely like in the second game. You basically die, and then after you have to rebuild your body because you actually are found, and you have to get all this cosmic surgery.
I'm sad that he knows this.
And
that sounds like the premise of Crank 2.
I've played Saints Row. It's fun sometimes. But the first thing you do in the second game is like you rebuild your body, and you were a gentleman in the first game. But in the second game, when you do your reconstructive surgery, you can actually like put like breast implants in and like put a clown wig on, and it's like, okay, so you guys are going for serious undertones. Is that what's going on in this situation?
I like how clown wig is reconstructive surgery.
If you thought that they grabbed the trash can full of ideas last time, I think this time they went and bought the whole damn landfill, because this shit is crazy. Like, and seriously, they're not the remotest bit apologetic about it. They're like, we are absolutely doing the most ridiculous,
yeah,
insane fucking game ever.
If you're going to go, might as well go all the way.
This is the same company that also put a unicorn that fires rainbows out of his ass.
That's how unicorns work, Zav.
Well, see, seriously, I don't know. I don't believe it, but they seem to think that that's true.
So, it's going to be hard for them. I think that they're taking, for fans of this, I think they're taking the right tact in that they're starting off the third with you, like, still, like, your gang is badass. You are at the top of your game. You're not going to have to wait to get stuff.
Okay.
You're not going to have to wait to build up. You do wind up, by virtue of a botched mission, getting dropped into a new city where you have to fight for what you get, but you've already, like, established that you are badasses. It's more like you're having to, like, carve out your new turf in a new spot, and like you'll wind up with like vertical takeoff and landing planes that have like laser guns, and you can like call in airstrikes and missile batteries and tanks, and it's pretty much just nuts.
Regardless of what you think about the Grand Theft Auto games, whether or not you like them, I think that series does a really great job of introducing you to brand new characters, and it's a very narrative experience, whereas Saints Row is like you are always sort of playing the same thing. And to me, it felt like after the second game and this one, it's like Metroid. It's like you start Metroid off and Samus has all this amazing armor, and then something happens and she loses it all. You got to go collect it all again. You know what I mean? That's the approach to Saints Row. It's like you always play with these same characters, the same group, and you're constantly trying to rebuild everything, you know?
So, you'll still have to be carving out your space as in a land grab, but you won't have to be rebuilding to get stuff. Like, you'll have access, I think they said, to like 90% of the badass stuff right from the outset of the game. Like, their goal in this game is not to make you climb to get stuff, but is to give it to you right off the bat and let you just go fucking have crazy fun with
it. Is it still like turf war based? Because I think that's how the second one was.
Yes, they still do have the turf war. There are blah 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 blah. There are three gangs in this new town, and one of them is the Luchadores, which are a bunch of obviously
wrestlers,
mask wearing Mexican wrestlers. Yes,
that's cool.
You could tell where they're going with that, right?
Yeah.
What do you expect from a game where they were sure to point out right at the beginning that every weapon in the game
is a dildo,
and better yet, has a groin attack?
Oh, jeez.
That's right. They're going to hit you with the disabler.
Boy, oh boy.
All right, we'll hit you with the disabler for a minute. We still have a ton of stuff. We are way behind. Like, we are way behind.
Why would you do that to me?
We still have NGP.
Don't worry, audience. We'll hit you in the groin. Wait, what? Why?
We're just making sure they stick around. We're just like, make them crumple for a minute, and then we'll come back and give them some more good stuff with the NGP. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back on the other side.
Age of Conan Unrated.
Fetch my loincloth.
It's like, are they putting something in the water?
Athecthian Savage.
Fetch my loincloth.
Age of Conan will be relaunched under a free-to-play model this summer. Age of Conan.
Fetch my loincloth.
Unrated. Age of Conan.
Athecthian Savage. Savage. Savage.
Unrated. Unrated.
It is a
sexiest of us.
Unrated. Unrated.
Oh yeah, that's right. Oh, it is. Sexiest of us savage.
Savage. Strangely though, I really want to play. It's so weird. It's so fucked up.
I do too. I do too.
I don't know. It's the morbid curiosity. Like you want to see.
It's the sexiest of us savage. Oh yeah, that's right. Oh yeah, it is.
Eat it, Asheron's call. Eat it, Asheron's call.
It's positioned as the sexiest and most savage MMO in the world.
Did I mention we were drinking beers last week?
I should have listened to that show. I really like the fact that you sampled that time that Garnet pulled out that violin and started playing. That was a really odd sample to use, but it was great. No, that's a really kicking tune, actually.
It was a very good. Nice beats, Del Rio.
Yeah.
We still need to get that like mixed track tape thing together, whatever it's going to be. It's not really, you can't really, I was going to say mixtape, but like a mixtape of the way he like goes all over the board, it would be weird. I don't know if you can actually wizardry that together. You kind of have to just give it as each one. Maybe it's an album. They make it.
Yeah.
There you go. All right. So we still have tons of games. Jeff was like, can I talk about Red Faction a little bit?
Yeah.
Yes, you may.
Well, Red Faction Guerrilla was one of my top five games the year it came out. I think it's probably in my top Xbox 360 releases.
Wow, really?
I love that game.
Really? Okay.
I really do. And chief among the reasons is because of the destructibility of the environments. It does destructibility in a way that no other game does, in that each structure that's built in the game is composed of parts, and you smash into those things, and those parts all disassemble.
Right.
And that is such a satisfying thing, rather than a lot of games like
Bad Company 2 has
awesome destructibility, but it's more like parts get broken off in chunks and stuff. But this is
just kind of vaporizes.
Yeah, this is the feeling of taking your sledgehammer and smashing into the side of something and breaking it apart is so satisfying. But also, it does that open world, choose your mission and figure out a way to infiltrate that environment that Crackdown had and other open world games have. It did that in such a really fun way because you had such a myriad options. These mechs you can use. You had jetpack. You can fly in the center and just do the thing and fly out.
Right.
You can
break a hole through the wall and build your own route. Yeah,
amazing. Take a truck and smash through the wall. Whatever. That was so much fun.
This, however,
none of that. Let's take all that fun stuff and throw it into the garbage for Volition to find.
The destructibility. the destructibility of it is still in the game, right?
Yes. It is less so in a way. I mean, there's still, I shouldn't diminish
it. It still has ruin mode, doesn't it?
Yes, it does have ruin mode, which is awesome. But it also, one of the first things that happens in the single player after the prologue is you get thrown down into a deeper area of Mars that's all organic. And it's like,
and it doesn't work in geometry. You can't destruct the geometry.
Yes, you keep climbing out and then you encounter structures and the destructibility is back.
But you can harvest vegetables.
But
it sounds like a delicious game. It is delicious.
So it's a shooter. It's a third-person shooter, and it is a shooter. There's lots of little crawly critters that are running at you,
it's a new genre.
Shoot them. Shooter, it's like Newsy News.
Newsy News. Later.
Here's where the game is awesome. You do have this new thing called the magnet gun. And, of course, we've seen this thing, again, in Crackdown and other games, where you can attach one end to something and another end to another thing, and it attaches those things and causes physic fun to happen. I think this game does it much better and more fun than any game I've ever seen, chiefly because, again, you can create parts to things and break them apart and use.
Yeah.
And you can also stretch that tether much farther than you can in a lot of other games. Just Cause had that.
Yeah.
Crackdown had it. But this, it really, you can attach an enemy to something way far away and it'll just catapult them.
And the thing that they do that's really smart is that there's no ammo attached to it.
Exactly.
And
you do it as much as you want.
Whatever you want. Yeah.
It becomes the most fun I'm having in that game. In fact, I don't want to be using other weapons. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, you get into these situations where you kind of have to start using those weapons because there's so many enemies coming at you and you just need to shoot them rather than having fun ways to deal with them. But yeah, attaching something to an exploding barrel and throwing that across the environment and blowing up thing and seeing all the pieces of that building crumble is extremely fun. I just want the game back that I loved. I want that open world mission structure back because it works so well with these mechanics.
But you consider... Is there no room for them to do something new?
Yeah, I mean, can you consider...
This is not new. This is old. This is third-person shooter, linear, not new whatsoever. It's, escort the convoy and shoot the enemies. It's boring. You know, within that, there's this really fun mechanic that I like playing the game quite a bit. I just really miss what I loved about Guerrilla.
But dude, like having a great gravity gun alone, like, I'm sorry, it's been a long time since Half-Life 2. I'm ready for some gravity gun shenanigans.
Try subtracting your expectation from it. How is it in and of itself?
As a third-person shooter with this fun destructibility thing, I like it a lot.
Yeah, okay.
The shooting is good. The upgrade system is interesting. And of course it has, which I don't think the first game had, or not the first game, but the previous game, Guerrilla had, which is that rebuild mode as well.
The Nanoforge rebuild. Yeah. It wasn't, I don't think that existed.
Right, yeah, I'm fairly certain you're correct.
Oh,
it.
I don't know, maybe.
Well, it certainly didn't to this extent, whereas you can pretty much rebuild anything you destroy, and a lot of the game is rebuild the bridge so the thing can cross it or whatever. But it also can work in the sense of you can blow something apart, or an enemy can blow something apart, and then you can rebuild it to stand behind it and use it for cover.
That is new, because I remember one of the first boss battles that I played in the game when I played it at a demo was this enemy that would destroy cover, and you would constantly have to rebuild it, which I thought was really
awesome. I think
that's
the first boss battle of the game. Yeah, okay. It's this like spider-looking thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's cool. That's cool. Although rebuilding is not as cool as destroying, because rebuilding, it's creating it out of nanobots or whatever, so it's just like it just materializes. Mm-hmm. If it like sucked those parts up and formed it again, that would be rad.
Yeah, that'd be
cool. You know, it doesn't have that. So yes, the magnet something to something, I could do that for hours and hours and have. I'm only about 25% in the game. Single player wise, but
your impressions are really confusing me, because like you talk about that and you like it and you get excited, but then you get pissed off.
The rest of the game is so pedestrian. It's so been there, done that, and it feels like a step backward rather than a step forward.
I'll tell you, I did not have any fun when I was playing the gameplay when I played at events. I didn't have any fun fighting the aliens.
Right. Yeah, and you do a lot of alien fighting. Whereas in the first game, you're fighting other guys in different factions, and you create alliances, and you
This game's a bug hunt, right?
Yeah, it's a bug hunt.
The first time they've ever put aliens in the series, and a lot of people have been questioning why they did it, and they thought it was because it would be more dynamic in the way that you fight people, but it seems like...
It's much more horror-y as well. There's a lot of sequences where you're in the dark, and you have a flashlight, and a bug will jump out at you, which the previous game didn't have at all. And,
yeah.
So the Dead Space effect?
Yeah.
Yeah, because definitely.
I mean, it's not completely survival horror, but it's definitely more.
This series
angle.
Just sounds like it has an identity crisis. You know what I mean? Like every iteration changes so substantially that I don't know exactly what they're trying to go for.
And the central—they're
just fooling around with it, man. You know, they don't know. They're just playing around with it.
The central thing—they
have a design direction. I just don't understand. Like,
I'm
you know, they try to bring this back to like the underground city stuff because that's what people really liked from the first one. And then people were like, oh, but we like the open world. So there's sections where it seems like
open world.
Well, I
think they felt
like
they lost some of the minor element. I mean, like, it was all like the whole thing of it was supposed to be like Mars was colonized as a mining establishment. And this was all about the Red Faction who were like rising up for the miners' rights and, you know, rebelling against the oppressing factions.
But that's what's so great about that series. It's about this revolution from these, you know, these people who are being oppressed. And now in this game, it still carries that brand, but it's an alien shooting game.
Vive la revolution.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah. Just give me a...
All right, we're moving on.
Yeah.
I thought they really...
It's worth playing if you really like shooters and that mechanic is really, really fun. It's just a disappointment.
Listening,
you love
I find it hard not to feel like some of your disappointment is a... like response to how excited you were about what the old game was and disappointment that it's not
that. I loved that game. I think it's a very underrated game.
Do you think it's worth playing the game in full, or do you think people, if they want to blow shit up, they could just try it on the demo?
Maybe try it on. If you love the demo,
maybe.
All right, so before we get to NGP, since we're our way behind, I just have to talk for a minute because I love these sorts of games, and I was so, like, the biggest standout, big jump from the last demo I'd seen it to this E3 demo is Lord of the Rings: War in the North,
ooh,
which I am a huge whore for that sort of game. I love them, and I absolutely love Snowblind stuff. And the GDC demo, which was like the snow level, was I mean, honestly, I think I've said it. Frankly, it was rough. Like, the combat wasn't tuned in yet. The environments weren't there. It just wasn't that cool. It was like there were glimmers of ideas in the combat system with the combos and the way they would stack amongst the characters. But it was a little made me a little nervous. Their demo for E3 erases any of that nervousness. It's freaking really, really fun. It's really, really cool. One of the things they introduce is there's the three set characters that you choose from in your party, which is I have to open back up my pad here. It's the dwarf, the elf, and the human, which was, you know, like a lore master and a champion or a ranger. But there's a fourth character, and the fourth character is one of the giant eagles.
Really?
Yes.
You can play as an eagle?
And you go and rescue the giant eagle at the beginning of the game.
So,
and he's like,
how do you play as an eagle?
We don't play as the eagle. He's like a call-in, but he's like a companion partner to your party.
Oh,
so it's still a party of three.
But I was about to freak out that you could play as an eagle.
The eagle, but he's super powerful and he's massive. He's really cool to bring in. The biggest thing was that they showed here was in back into like normal. It wasn't in the, like, I think part of what hurt them in the GDC demos was all snowlands. So it's like a lot of white. You don't really see any detail here. It was like you break into this like fortress. You free the eagle who's been like trapped in the center of this courtyard and chained down. And the like whole the exercise of having to free him while fighting off different attackers from different directions really pulled out the support mechanics of the three classes. You really had to like work together to use them. And I think that right there is like, that's one of the hardest things to do. If you look at Hunted that just came out, you know, I played a lot of Hunted at different demo events, and it always felt like it was, you could always get that, it always had that creeping sense of, oh, they're making me play this way. Because I was like, here's a setup, here's a piece of cover for the archer to sit behind, here's where the like warrior's going to go. This was much more like it just sort of evolved on the battlefield.
That's cool.
Because things would happen, and you'd have to respond, and maybe you needed your healer, maybe you needed your range guy, maybe you need your warrior, but you're like flipping around and slipping between them very naturally. They also showed off the skill trees, and each one of the classes has a very cool three-tiered skill tree, so it looks like there's going to be a lot of good stuff there. I was super, super happy. I was like,
yeah, it's one of my big ones on the list.
You've been amped about this game for a while.
Yeah, and I was really worried but I was definitely concerned after the GDC demo. And the combat has been tightened up tremendously. Like the controls were back to being like spot on. It's very...
Is that game coming out this year, or is it 2012?
I don't know.
I think it's scheduled. I could look it up in a minute, but it'll be in the coverage. I think it's actually scheduled for this fall. I'm pretty sure it's scheduled for this fall. And the other thing that might be nice for people who like it is that it will support vertical two-player split screen. And you can also do that while connected online. So you could have two people playing locally with one other person online. So you'll be able to play within the within the full three system. And the loot system is thousands and thousands of items. You see them all on your character, so it'll have all that stuff you want. All right.
NGP.
Yeah, well, NGP, what do you want to know about it? So they set us up. Yoshida was there, who's the president of Worldwide Studios, and you know, he gave like a little introduction about where they're going with, and well, first of all, of course, he like said it, apologized again for the service interruption, which we moved on quickly from that. He talked about what they wanted to do with NGP, and it's interesting. I mean, you've heard it a million times, but like they are absolutely dead set that they're going to make the most sophisticated, the most badass, rich environment, rich media experience that you could hold in your hands. So
I like that goal.
It sounds like the same goal they had when they were introducing us to the PS3, and then they told us how much it cost.
Well, that's true, but I've always been of the position that I want at least somebody to be trying to make the Ferrari of video game systems.
No, I understand that.
I like that, but
definitely going for that. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, but I wonder, based on how many the losses that they've recently incurred, I wonder where this system falls in line with them financially.
Well, is it going to fall in line with us financially? Right.
How many jobs am I going to need to have this time?
One of the questions that people ask on Twitter when I spoke about this yesterday morning, that was like, hey, you know, like we're going to talk about this, was like, so will this be another of their over promising and under deliverings? I am here to tell you that I think that solely, even if it was only on the strength of the screen, that when you see this thing, you will say this delivers. Because one of the hardest things that I'm seeing right now is conveying to anybody who sees a screenshot from a game on a regular monitor, an LCD monitor, mm-hmm. how damn good this thing works, because the OLED screen is gross. It is so vibrant. The blacks on it are so good. The richness of the colors are so strong that when I'm looking at it on my laptop screen or when I'm looking at it on my monitors, I'm like, this does not look as good. And there's no way I can give it to anybody out there on the internet looking as good, because I can't put it on an OLED screen for them and say, this is what it looks like.
Yeah. Do you think that, you know, were we to be given a OLED iPad or OLED iPod?
You'd wet your pants.
I'd wet my pants. And do you think it would immediately lessen the impact of an NGP? I mean, is that really why it feels like the future?
I think that especially in these smaller devices where the fidelity of the screen is so important to the experience, that you see that really standing out. I mean, look at the value in phones right now of like having a QHD screen or having a Retina display. Like, it makes a big difference.
It does.
And in this size factor, like having that vibrant screen, having that amazing screen, like, dude, you're going to put this thing next to, like, I realize that they're going for different things, but you're going to put this thing next to 3DS and be like, what the hell? Because it's a smoking hot, honestly, the most amazing little screen I've ever seen. Like, well, other than when I first saw Sony OLEDs at CES like 3 years ago, like, that screen tech is just, it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Really impressive screen tech. The sticks, which are the next big innovation on it, are awesome to have there. There's going to be a learning curve for developers to use them, because the sticks, so the way they are is there's a little cup. You remember those, like, you know, like when you go to the dentist's and there's like those paper cone cups?
Yeah.
So imagine that the sticks are inside like little plastic cones like that, set down into the body.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And, and the sticks are maybe entire length of them, like about half inch, you think? There's short little stubby sticks. Now, they have a full range of motion. They're not they're not like sliders. They are literally sticks. But
so what you're saying, is that instead of the stick coming up from the device sinks in, and the stick sits inside that little hole.
Yeah, like it comes out just a wee bit over the top, but it's mostly set down within that cuff.
Got it.
To protect it as well.
Yeah,
which makes sense.
Yeah.
It really makes sense. And the range of motion is not inhibited at all. As a matter of fact, that feels really good, because you're gripping the thing with your four fingers behind the back of it. Mm-hmm. And then you put your thumbs on the sticks and they fit really nicely under your thumbs. And so then you're able to move around. Now, the thing that I ran into is, and the biggest place that had this problem was Uncharted, which is, you know, basically a third-person shooter, is that it's going to take a while for designers and developers to compensate their stick tuning routines to the shorter throws and the twitchier nature of these sticks, because they're so much shorter and there's so much lesser throw, like a little bit of a vibration with this thing and it moves around a lot.
Does it still have sort of that snap too that the PSP had to sort of force itself to do in order to get the shooting to work properly, where you click a one of the shoulder buttons to snap to a next target?
They haven't done that yet.
They haven't done that.
So I don't know what they will do that, but they didn't have that. I mean, they were showing off that, look, we've got twin stick controls and you can control it like a shooter. And it worked pretty well, but the part was really like where it got troublesome was when I was trying to line up and make like a headshot, or like really be like stuck behind cover and pop and shoot, was it was really tough to like do that last little bit of minute aiming. And I think that they'll find that. I mean, they found it with sticks before. I mean, go back to controller gaming of the PS1, early PS2 era, and you're like, wow, you can't play a shooter on these games at all. Now there are a lot of people who think you can, and I appreciate PC gamers who are now like throwing shit, but you know, it's never gonna be mouse and keyboard, obviously. That's a whole other thing. But game designers figured out how to tune to sticks, and I think that they will learn how to tune to sticks to this. It's a matter of how quickly they will.
How do the buttons feel? Because the buttons have changed a lot versus, you know, the PSP versus the PSP Go. They've gone smaller. They've gone a little clickier. You know, how about that stuff? How does that work out?
It has buttons.
I'm aware that it has buttons.
See, here's what's interesting is one of the things they showed off was how many input methods it has. And of all the games I played, buttons were very marginalized. Like, they're just like, they are so many ways.
You're using the triggers, you're using the thing, and you're touching.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they're like the buttons are mainly used to fiddle around with menu systems. And
that is awesome. And I'm going to tell you why, because playing a shooter on PSP and having to use those buttons for, you know, direction, terrible.
You just don't really use them here. I mean, they're just not that many places that I use them.
Buttons now, are so last gen.
Just take them out.
The backside touchscreen is something a lot of people are going to ask about. And I found it awkward at first, and I talked to some of the other folks who have like been working on games with it, and they said there's a little bit of a learning curve just because you're holding the thing with your hands as well, and you have to kind of get it like, do I want to use my middle finger or do I want to use my first finger? Mm-hmm. You know, which finger do I use when I want to like touch? And it's like personal preference. What they've done is they've textured that section a little bit, so you get like a tactile feel to it. Once you figured out where it is surprisingly cool to be able to just like tap the back of your gun and have it reload.
That is cool. Is it a learning curve across the board, or is it a learning curve game to game?
Well, there were only a couple of games that used it. Like, primarily, the one that used it was Uncharted, and it just took me a little while to like grok. Like,
well, Little Deviance is the one.
Little Deviance used it a lot too.
Built around that, right?
Yeah, and so by the time I played Little Deviance, I was not struggling with using it so much as just like I was sort of like fumbling with holding the thing and figuring out which finger to use, because I was like, well, I like it, like, nah, maybe like it. Nah, I go with my. I decided I think I like using it with my middle finger, but then I had pretty long hands, and so it was pretty easy to reach back there. I don't know.
And
everyone will decide what they like.
In each case, are they giving you a visual cue as to where your finger is, or are you just sort of feeling it?
Well, so in each case, they have a visual cue. I don't know about Uncharted, but Little Deviance certainly. Like Little Deviance, all the games that use the back have like a back thing. Like, so Little Deviance, if you saw that, that's the one that has like the like rolly ball thing on the environment where you're like pushing the environment from the bottom to roll the ball into holes. Mm-hmm. So it has a number of little, it's actually a bunch of little mini games. And one of the mini games is like a three-dimensional whack-a-mole, where instead of just tapping like the mole that comes up in the right box, it'll be facing one direction or the other, and you have to either tap it on the front of the screen or tap it on the back screen.
Wow.
Sounds
neat.
So it's kind of a neat little application of that. Let me see what else I have for Little Deviance. The bowl and roll. Oh, and they were one of the ones to use the augmented reality seal. So they have like an augmented reality shooter that's in there. And
is it as cool as other? I mean, is it?
Well, the thing about the augmented reality on the NGP that's pretty neat is that you can either do it with or without a placement card. And if you do it with a placement card, the difference that you get is that the processor is better able to identify where the flat surface that you want to project as the base of the environment is.
Right.
So we wanted to make this table the base of the environment. If we put the card on there, then it like totally understands that's the ground plane.
It has
plane.
A tracking point. Yeah.
That's the ground plane. Anything below it is below it. Anything above it is above it. If we don't put that down, it'll still work. And like something like this table where it's flat and nice like this, pretty likely that it's going to figure out that that's the ground plane.
This is a nice table.
It is a nice table. It's pretty likely it's going to figure out that this is the ground plane and set everything on that. But in a larger scale environment, it might, like, you know, if you're like sitting on a park bench, like looking out over like a park or whatever, it might have a little trouble figuring out like, well, where is the ground and how far out is the horizon and where am I supposed to stick these virtual characters?
Right.
Which is like what you do with Reality Fighter, which.
Oh, sweet Lord.
We don't talk about much.
I was putting screenshots up for this. I just want to mention that the Reality Fighter is a game where it's a fighting game, but you know, point the camera into just the regular environment, and then the fighters show up in the regular environment, start fighting it out. It's a really cool, neat concept that I was telling Garnet. I was like, that'd be a kind of a cool thing. Like if I could play, you know, Marvel versus Capcom, and one of the like stages is like, just use what's outside, you know. But for full game, it seems like what was that chair racing game that came out when the Move came out? I don't even Kung Fu Riders. It seems like they're Kung Fu Riders of like, look what it can do,
and
it
totally
still costs like, you know, it seems like it's not going to be one of those cheap games. It's going to be one of their launch titles.
I don't know. That's sort of the purpose of launch titles is look what it can do.
Sure. But, you know, I think the Little Deviance does a good job of showing all of those things off. I just think that this
Little Deviance was quite fun, actually.
You know, I'm
I enjoyed
saying,
Little Deviance.
You're saying that does a good job.
It's not meaty enough
it can
to
do.
Be its own.
Right.
Thing.
It doesn't seem meaty enough for it to be its own.
Little
thing.
Little Deviance is much more meaty.
Yeah.
Much more meaty. Those deviants, they're meaty deviants. And so, I think one of the things that comes up here then is that first of all, even just playing with these slave units that are attached to dev kits is like this hardware is really impressive, which I think is going to be the ultimate answer to is going to force the answer to the question of do people want that experience in a handheld? And that's really the big
thing. Did you? Now, specifically with Uncharted. obviously.
We're going to do a couple of the user questions here because I'm going to finish on a very high point because I am absolutely 100% going to buy one of these when they come out, if only for one game.
Uncharted?
No.
Reality Superstardust?
No.
Not Superstardust?
No. Jonathan Mack's new game. And it's it's fucking genius.
All right.
But Omega DMZ on Twitter asked, even if you liked Uncharted Golden Abyss, which is the name of the Uncharted game, which, by the way, is a brand new Uncharted experience. It's a prequel that like, goes back and shows some of Drake's early adventuring.
Baby Drake!
Not Baby Drake. It's like, you know, just another adventure you've been on. It's like, even if you like this, do you care about
it? Baby Sully?
Do you care about it, or would you rather play a game like this on a big TV?
This is the question that came up when PSP came out to begin with.
Yes.
You know, this
even
is like
more apropos now.
Sony was like, look what it can do. It has amazing technology. And it does. Granted, it does. But we've had these discussions before of when we play our handheld game, do we want something that's going to bring us into an experience the way that a console game does, where you are sitting on your couch and you have that time? Or is this going to have the titles that, you know, Nintendo DS or the iPhone or iPad, those itches, does it scratch the same itches of those quick hits?
I think that question really is asking, how do you play handhelds? Are you playing handhelds while you're traveling? Mm-hmm. Are you playing handhelds while you're away from your console? Are you deciding to play your handheld instead of sitting in the living room and playing your console? Because the answer to that question is different for all those different aspects. Because I would love, on a five-hour flight from Toronto like I just took, I would love to play some Uncharted in my lap and have it look as good as
right.
Uncharted on my television one.
I think the thing with that specifically, it's going to be like people will buy the NGP and then they'll buy Uncharted because they want to play more Uncharted. It's not because they were like, man, I really wish I could play Uncharted on the go. They just want to play more Uncharted and they like that franchise.
I think that's a good point.
I don't necessarily think it's because, man, I really wish I could bring my TV outside with me and play Uncharted outside. It's like, I think it's because they like that franchise and those characters.
Well, that's true, of course. But also, don't you think there's something awesome about... I mean, when I was a kid, mm-hmm. and I had to go to grandma's house, and the drive was however many hours, I wanted to play my little freaking handheld thing that was crappy, and it was LED, and was stupid.
Right.
You know? But now you can bring Uncharted with you, and you can't, because grandma doesn't have a PS3, and you can't haul the PS3 to grandma's, you know?
The hell you can't.
Because grandma doesn't have an HD TV, she's got that old tube television that sucks.
Well, I mean, and I haven't played the Uncharted game or seen any games up close, but I mean, I will definitely buy the NGP to play Uncharted because I like that franchise. I'm not saying that...
But if you're worried about what it's going to look like, let me tell you, like, it's doing a freaking phenomenal job of impersonating a PS3. It's doing procedurally generated water where, like, Drake's walking through a stream, and as he's walking, it's like naturally splashing around his feet, and the water is adjusting and coursing around his feet the way it should be. It's doing like massive smoke effects and particle effects and like incredibly detailed character models. They're just like, well, we just take the character models out of the Uncharted games and put them in here. We put the entire animation system out of Uncharted. Yeah, it's the same one in the NGP
game. It's a Toy Story level.
And the
graphics.
Game looks the screenshots alone look fantastic.
I mean, think about the value proposition. Once upon a time, we were talking about this. Is like, look, I can use the same animations, I can use the same libraries and stuff, and make these games. And so maybe from a developer standpoint, it's a little more okay. There's over 2 hours of movies in this Drake's game. All of them done.
And none of them have anything to do with Drake's Uncharted. Just movies there. You're like, you'll come over.
All of them done
like,
the exact same way they are in the PS3 game.
Twilight Kickboxer. Zone episodes.
All right.
Is this Bloodsport?
I mean, it gets crazy, dude. They have like, they're like bragging, they have like 260,000 polygons per frame in the freaking game. It's like, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. So, that having been said, my game of having played with these was Sound Shapes, which I don't even know. Like, it's another, like, I love, maybe I'm just like, I still love I love my big adventure games, but I do love these indie spirit games. Like, this game is amazing in its ability to combine like fun platform game mechanics and immersion into sound. And you guys know I love sound games, which, by the way, if you haven't checked out our Pulse review, you should check out Pulse because I play Pulse on iPad and that's really fun too.
Yeah.
Can you check that out?
No.
It's really fun.
Yeah.
I've got it here. You can check it out for a minute. So this game, Sound Shapes, which I hope they rename because that's a dreadful name, is if you ever played music, then you know what the staff line looks like, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now imagine the staff line as the base back, you know, the canvas on which you're going to paint a platformer. And now we put notes from the different instruments that are being sequenced in each measure onto the staff. Okay?
Got it.
So we got dots. Now we take the stems off of them so we just have spots in space. Now, the object of the game is that you'll be able to move this little character through the world, and as you hit each one of those dots in a measure, it activates that sequence, and it starts building music. So, like, maybe the first one is just getting the drums down. And after you get the drums, you add the hi-hats. And after you get the hi-hats, you add the keyboards, melodies, basses, all that. So eventually, like, by the time you get to the end of each level area, you move on to the next one, you've got, like, the whole music rocking. And you then have the levels built out with, like, platforms and pitfalls and other things for you to move and jump from. And you have, like, a little character that's like a little rolly ball thing, and he rolls along the edges of everything and can jump and move from each one to one. And as he moves through all these spaces, he's got to hit all the dots, activating all the music, and not fall to his death or get hit by any of, because there are also things that, like, can shoot you and kill you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, like, the gameplay mechanic of it. And then you can all, it also has, like, this incredible full build your own levels and music, which also has one of the most intuitive music production tools I've ever seen, where you, like select instruments and, like, can easily lay down measure after measure of music. So you can build a level by laying down measures of music and then put in the platforming pieces so that it can be played. Or you could go vice versa and build out, like, a platformer level and put pieces of music in it so that it could be played by this guy to go find the music pieces.
Wow.
Awesome.
I gotta say, though, and you know, apropos of our last discussion, mm-hmm. that particularly doesn't feel like an on-the-go experience. It feels like an at-home sound system experience.
Okay. So this is something where I would sit down like I would with my iPad with some of the music sequencers that have come out for iPad, yeah, and right. really sit down and spend some time playing right. around and fooling around.
Or like Sword and Sorcery is, where you
right.
want the audio experience.
The thing with the Uncharted thing is I think that I'm not disparaging them for putting that game on the platform. I just think that that's the game that I'm going to purchase because I already own my NGP because I like that franchise. Mm-hmm. But this sounds like a unique experience to that platform, which I think is what I'd like to see more from new hardware when it's released.
All right. Yeah,
that's pretty awesome. Well, we know music is a big part of gamers' lives, and right now we have the Beat Bullies with All on My Own.
All of my life, who never saw the relationship I had with this mic. Man, this music is my life, and my name got a ring to it, so music is my wife. Young-minded peeps, step aside. You're really playing yourself when you speak all them lies. All I know how to do is speak the truth, and you can't fathom that, cause fake is what you're used to. All facts in my life, in the boot too. You hear my voice in your ear without your Bluetooth.
I'll go as far as my eyes can see, and I feel like I can see forever. And thank God for blessing me, cause I'm all on my own. See, I was raised in the city where no pity is shown.
There you go. The Beat Bullies are back, and that is their latest single, All On My Own. We will have more in the show notes and, of course, available on iTunes from their page, all that kind of stuff. Support the musicians who very generously let their music be promoted here on the show. We love it. We love music. And I'm a computer. We have your stuff. It's coming, dude. We're going through stuff. I'm a computer. He's a good guy. I just wanted him to know. I hadn't had a chance to get back to him otherwise. I know he listens. There you go. It's the easiest way to get back to him.
Cool.
I should get back to all my voicemails.
Yeah, that's a like, new segment. Bye. Garnet answers his voicemail. Mom, yes, I'm
that's so sad. It's exactly what I was thinking. I was like, well, my mom always listens too, and I keep throwing her to voicemail.
Oh, hi, Miss Lee.
Such a good kid. Anyway, so here's what we're going to do, because we're already way behind. We're going to do the news, and then we're going to do the longest finishing moves ever with our E3 Predictorama finishing moves. Yeah. So with no further ado, Mr. Zavdamatos, take it away with newsy news.
ShaqNews.com spotlight. If you want to go over to Shaq News, we have a preview and interview for StarCraft II Heart of the Swarm. We have a preview Metro Last Light if you want to hear more about that, and Batman Arkham City. We didn't get to talk about Call of Duty Elite, but you can read all about that on ShaqNews.com as well. And there's a contest for Spaz. You could try to win a copy of that.
Elite has brought up a lot of confusion. I think that anyone who's worrying about what they're going to charge for right now is worried about it ahead of time. Like, the secret sauce to this thing is that they've got to get people playing it. So if they put the paywall in anywhere but at the very extreme, this is just not going to work. I think they recognize that.
Well, they said it's going to be cheaper than any comparable service. Of course, there's no such thing as a comparable service to this.
Right.
That's a malarkey.
Is it a monthly fee, or is it going to be a one-time fee?
They haven't even said.
I think that from what it sounds like Project $10, except you have to pay that $10.
Here's the deal.
That's what it sounds like.
Well, and keep in mind, so it's all-inclusive for DLC. So let's say a game like that's going to get three big map packs.
$15 a pop.
However, they know that even as popular as that game is, let's say 80% of people are going to buy the first one, and maybe 65-70% are going to buy the second one, but by the time they get to the third map pack, that's going to fall off a lot.
Yeah.
If they tell the developer, hey, instead of giving you $45, you know, instead of giving you $45 at the end of the term from X number of people, we gave you a lot more people and gave you 30, they'd love that deal.
I
think they might charge actually less than all of the map packs would cost. Well, and say,
I don't think
because they get everybody to buy it.
I don't think that there's any chance of this being a one-time fee service. I think the only way it makes sense for them is start getting people.
Well, I don't think one time, but
subscribed to something, and it's supposed to be. It is supposed to be the link in the chain between this year's release of Call of Duty and next year's release of Call of Duty. And as long as we keep feeding that beast and getting people paying constantly, that's what they want.
I agree. I just think that they're going to I think they have to position it very affordably or it doesn't work.
My prediction is $4.99 a month.
It won't be dude, that's too much.
I don't know. There's no way to categorize this in any other context of, cuz there's no other game that does this on consoles.
No, and I realize like the stat keeping and everything is cool. The part that I thought was the most
But Bungie does that shit for free.
Exactly. That stuff's all done for free. The part that I thought was potentially the coolest, but the reason they need to have everybody in is that by watching all of these stats and applying like some intelligence to analyzing the data, they can look at it and say, Jeff, you like to play with the FAL, but you're not that great with it when you're using it in this situation. Here's a tutorial video from Call of Duty Pros on how best to employ the FAL in that situation.
I have a service that does that too. It's called YouTube.
Yeah. Also,
but it like, do you know what you're not good at and why you need to look at it?
Yeah, I intuit what I'm not good at.
All right.
I don't think if you're being spawned in and you're dying every 5 seconds, it's not because you picked the FAL versus the other weapon. It's because you're getting...
I might be able to say, hey, your accuracy with this gun is not as good as the average person with this gun or something like that.
Listen, I don't want to poop all over this idea because it...
We don't really know a lot
about
it.
The one thing I know for certain is that this is not for me. This was not made for me. This service and the concept of the service was not designed for me.
If that's a case, then it's going to be a failure.
I would be interested in it more if the current system that they have in place, where you go to Call of Duty's website and look at your Black Ops stats, if it worked. I don't think it's ever worked since the game ever launched. It doesn't work.
But what percentage of people... I mean, it's like designing a subscription service for competitive StarCraft players. You know what I mean? Like, there's people that play at that level, but that ain't the vast majority of people. And maybe their goal, and I think their stated goal, is to elevate everyone and say, we can make any level player better by using this service because you can. But it requires investment, not just monetarily. It requires you wanting to do that.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. That's the...
And the whole idea is it turns a game into work. Yeah. And for some people, that's what they want. That's great. Sure. That's not me.
It works for Blizzard. The other part of, you know, I mean, that's a different service, you know what I mean? But
that's what I thought when I first saw it. I was like, this is Alakazam for Call of Duty. This is Wowhead for Call of Duty.
The thing that bothers me mostly about that's it is they are packaging a bunch of different things with it, but they're packaging statistics and a lot of, like, stuff that's given away in a lot of games. Look at Resistance 3's website, you know, Killzone's website, Bungie. I keep going on and on. They give you this information on their websites, and now you're paying for it as part of the service? I just think that's... it's not for me.
I don't think you'll have to pay for the statistics, even though that's... I don't think you have to pay for the, like, the stuff we already have. Maybe the deeper stuff, because this statistical data management is obviously where they're incurring some, like, consistent regular cost. They can't avoid giving you the things that you're already expecting for free, but maybe there's another layer of that. I don't know. They've got a lot to figure out. I think the big thing is, if you're worried yet, don't worry yet, because they clearly, from talking to them, don't have the answer of what the pricing structure is going to be or what's going to be paid for and what's not.
They know it's something, but they haven't told us everything, so it's all speculation at this point. Let's move on to something that's confirmed, and that's the DS Lite. It's dropping to $99 on June 5th, Nintendo announced.
Is that the Lite or the I?
The Lite.
Oh, that's interesting.
So another thing that's sort of interesting is that they're repackaging a bunch of Mario titles to not put them at a budget price, but they're actually just rebranding them or repackaging them into these red boxes so they're a little bit more prominent.
So they're fooling, they're changing the color of the box.
So they're fooling mom in Target into thinking they're that's a budget title. Obviously, look at the new packaging.
When they made this announcement, they didn't mention anything about lower prices, and traditionally Nintendo doesn't reduce prices on their best-selling games, which are typically
especially not when
Mario
they're investing
games.
In all this new color of paint.
Exactly.
Ink, I mean,
They have all those red boxes. What are they going to do with them? Let's move on to Aliens Colonial Marines, the game that Gearbox is developing for Sega, which everyone thought they weren't developing anymore because we hadn't heard about it for a long time. Gearbox has now said that the game is still in development and is coming out for the PC, 360, and PS3 in spring 2012. So finally we have a date, and we had one screenshot for it, guys. Get excited for one screenshot.
Unfortunately, it was a title screen.
It was the credit listing. Described as, on the official site, it's a true sequel to the James Cameron Aliens film. Takes place on LV-426.
True sequel. It's a great line.
And it's going to be self-contained missions within the overarching narrative. It's going to be taking place immediately following the second film. So you're not going to see any of those characters, but you'll see the mayhem that ensues afterwards.
Just as long as when I die, it plays, game over, man!
I just hope one of the weapons is harsh language. Perfect World, the Chinese MMO maker, has purchased Cryptic Studios from Atari. Atari had been looking to sell Cryptic for quite some time. Of course, Cryptic being the developers of Champions Online and Star Trek Online. So they haven't said exactly, but the reports are that they've spent $50.3 million purchasing the studio and acquired 100% equity interest in the company. We don't know exactly what's going to happen next, but they did mention in the press release when they announced that they were making this purchase that they have a lot of technology. Cryptic has a lot of technology that Perfect World would like to utilize. And, of course, they have a whole slew of games in their region that they actually release and they publish. we're blazing through this. We're halfway there. PlayStation Store, after 6 weeks, has been restored. If you want to go to the PlayStation Store
It's been restored.
Nice.
Restored. The Welcome Back program that they've announced has not gone live yet. So what Sony is saying that they're still testing to make sure everything works before they execute that program, because I guess they assume a lot of people are going to want to get their free stuff. A couple of notable things that are on the PlayStation Store. They got like a ton of content when you go there now. Ton of stuff. A couple notable things. MotorStorm Apocalypse, there's a demo for that. Infamous 2, there's a demo for that, which comes out next week. MotorStorm already being out. And if you play Fallout New Vegas, Honest Hearts, the DLC, second DLC pack, has been released.
And there's like a pack of 200,000 credit card numbers you can download.
Yeah, it's so cool. Oh, man. I'm glad you said that joke and not me. That's Jeff Cannata. All right.
Two N's, one T.
Two N's. In that situation, you'd be like, it's two T's, one N. Hey, why don't we go with something a little bit more recent? Classic EA games are being added to the good old games library. They had a press conference on Thursday announcing that one of the companies they were trying to attract to bring their classic titles to good old games, of course, the DRM-free PC digital distributor, was EA. Now, there are three games currently available right now, starting today or starting on Thursday. Wing Commander Privateer, Dungeon Keeper, and Ultima Underworld 1 and 2 being packaged as one game.
Some of my favorite games right there. Dungeon Keeper. Dude, Privateer, amazing. Ultima Underworld, amazing.
Mm-hmm. So $5.99 per title. They have actually 25 games from EA's catalog that they're looking to release. Three more are coming out before the end of the month of June. But of course, the big question everyone has is System Shock and Syndicate. Those franchises, people want to play them. Unfortunately, Good Old Games said that it's a huge legal puzzle to release those games because so many pieces of it are owned by so many different people and parts. But they had the same problem with Baldur's Gate, and eventually Baldur's Gate did go on Good Old Games. So cross your fingers for that, ladies and gentlemen.
If you've never played Dungeon Keeper, go play Dungeon Keeper.
Yeah.
I loved that game.
Very good game.
Classic
Molyneux, right?
Oh, classic Molyneux. Yeah. Did you ever play Evil Genius?
I did play Evil Genius.
I love that game too. Yeah. I think, why is no one ever, like, that whole like reversed strategy game where they come and attack? It was almost sort of tower defense esque, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's interesting. It is kind of like that. Yeah, it's kind of the precursor in a way.
Interesting. I never thought about that. You know, you could actually build a dungeon keeper. And I had this conversation with someone over drinks a couple of weeks ago. They could technology, I think, has come along far enough that now you could actually realize the vision of Dungeon Keeper, where you could have you could be playing your single, because we're starting to get in this era now of where you're playing a game, but you're playing a game connected. And so because you're connected, people could join your game. I mean, you could get to a place now where you could build like a Dungeon Keeper where you're playing your single player game, and when you're ready to open it, you just open it, and then people randomly join. I mean, that's Demon's Souls. Imagine Demon's Souls, but you're building the dungeon or whatever, and that's then these players are just randomly jumping in and playing it.
I think we're going to see a resurgence of God games. I think that genre is going to is on a way back.
Oh, you missed me talking about From Dusk last week.
Yeah, right.
Oh,
exactly.
So good.
I think that genre has been dormant too long, and Some of my favorite games. Black and White is a great game.
Man, I let E3's stress get me frustrated sometimes, but I'm so excited about so many games right now.
Yep.
It's a good time to be a gamer.
Well, also, there's another good piece of news that if you like cross-platform play, the NGP and PS3 will actually work together in tandem when you're playing the new Wipeout coming out on NGP. I don't know if you saw any of this when you were playing Wipeout.
I didn't.
So what it does is PlayStation Network, as you know, has already embraced cross-platform play. Steam, you could play against people on PC and Mac for Portal 2. Wipeout, the new Wipeout game, which is tentatively titled Wipeout 2048, will be one of the first games to feature cross-platform multiplayer play between the NGP and the PS3. So you can be playing Wipeout on your NGP and playing against someone who's playing Wipeout on their PS3.
Crazy.
They said a couple of quotes here. It's 8 players. Any number of them could be on any platform. So it can be one PS3 against 7 NGPs, or it could be the other way around. Mix and match. You could still play the new Wipeout in 3D and then even play it on the NGP against someone else who's playing it in 3D on the console. So it mixes. It doesn't matter the technology. Now, This suggests that the NGP version of Wipeout is going to share a lot of the same tracks as the PS3 predecessor. They haven't announced that officially. However, they did say that the new NGP game, Wipeout 2048, is going to have 10 new tracks, 20 new ships, new modes, new weapons.
Yeah, that's the craziest thing. You can play on different tracks on different systems.
So, but that's crazy to be able to play. This is sort of, remember when they were showing the PSP and the PS3 working, like you can use it as a the mirror in F1 and things like that. Like that was one of those like gimmick things. But this is actually something that I think is really cool, where you can actually play the game against someone on your handheld versus the PS3.
Yeah,
which says a lot about the technology itself.
The in-game gimmickry stuff, though, I'm not sure that that's ever going to work out that well.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. That's why it's a gimmick.
Yeah. Well, so far it's been a gimmickry. And one of the Twitter questions, I didn't bring it, but one of the Twitter questions I remember someone asked was, do you think we'll ever see like where you could be playing like a PS3 version of Splinter Cell and use the camera in the NGP to like approach a door and like hold it down as like your, you know, like fiber optic camera or whatever. I'm like, I don't think so, because it seems like it would be really tough to translate that, and I don't know how well it would work. The only thing I would suspect is, I mean, I guess if you had like a PDA sort of thing going on, you could have the, you know, you could use it as your PDA. That'd be kind of cool, right? If you had
sure. But that example sounds funny, because if you're reading Shack News today, we had a post about there was box art found for Mass Effect 3 that had like Better with Kinect on the banner in the box art for Mass Effect. And every single comment's like, well, they've ruined Mass Effect. EA has destroyed BioWare. The world has come to an end. So it's just funny to hear that like they want to use motion gaming to use the NGP as a mirror. Whereas, you know,
well, it's not motion gaming. It's more like interactive device thing.
But it's still something that's like you're adding to it using this very specific. That's a very strange thing to come up. This is the last piece of news, and then we have some announcements. But we talked about The Witcher 2. It's now coming officially to the Xbox 360.
Sweet.
This summer. By the end of 2011. Of course, the game, when it was first announced, was also announced for consoles, and CD Projekt Red said it was always intended to come out on consoles, but they put the console version on the shelf while they fixed and finished the PC version. So now that that's been released, which they say have sold over 400,000 units since launching just 2 weeks ago.
Nice.
Selling pretty well. And of course, this is across digital channels, their own digital channel, Steam, and wherever else it's made available. The game is now going to come out to the Xbox 360 only. No PS3 version was mentioned. They did say, again, that it's going to come out by the end of the year. They say that it won't compromise quality in its conversion. However, they did note that the game is very scalable when they mentioned that. So they're like, it won't compromise quality, but you can talk to someone.
Ultra settings,
They were talking about how someone on low settings still thinks the game looks great. They talk about art direction in that sense.
Don't tell them.
And then really quickly, they also mentioned that there is a PC patch going to be available today when you hear this that's going to fix a bunch of stuff. So the game's prologue I found to be really, really difficult.
Maybe that'll change. Certain,
they've actually tweaked the prologue. They've balanced it out a little bit. They've added the ability to map keys. It tweaks the target locking if you get too far from people. It fixed errors people had with The Witcher 1 save files.
Oh, yeah. I heard about that. They would lose or... Yeah,
they'd have to restart. When they patch it again, people would have to restart. And then also, this patch brings new DLC, which all the DLC for the game has been free. This allows people to change
hairstyles.
Oh,
which
sweet.
People were apparently, they even mentioned this in their conference, that people were freaking out about the hairstyles. They're like, what is this ponytail bullshit? They're like, no.
Witcher does not wear a ponytail.
We want business in the front, party in the back. Yeah.
Dude, did you have the Sex in the Rose Garden thing? When you were playing? No.
Did I just Are we talking something? About real life or real life?
No. Also, real quick, it's cool that it's coming out on 360. There, at the end of chapter one, the story gets really bifurcated, and you have to choose one side or the other. So I assume very different on a second playthrough. So I might
it is very different. If you read the review on Shack News.
So I got a question. How censored is this thing going to be for 360?
That is a very good question. That's a very good question.
I don't know. The ESRB rated it an M.
It's
the
an M.
Same exact game. I mean, it is definitely an M, but why would they censor it anymore?
So then let me ask you a knock-on question of that of if the ESRB rated it an M and they're fine with that and the content doesn't change, how are you going to feel if Microsoft says, well, that's fine that they said that, but we're not comfortable with this for our licensed title?
I don't think
they'll say it, but that's interesting. It's interesting, especially I remember all the hullabaloo that happened.
Don't think they'll do that? I'm not going to say that I think that they do, but I wouldn't rule it out of the realm of possibility.
You're saying that Microsoft is going to tell CD Projekt Red that they want them to
I think that's
censor the game that is coming exclusively on their platform. Are you high? Absolutely possible. Why would they do that?
To avoid fallout from popular response on a platform that's much more mainstream and child friendly.
I remember all the brouhaha. I said brouhaha and hullabaloo. So there you go.
Brouhaha.
Mass Effect, with the sex scene in Mass Effect, and I don't know if that was more stemming from the fact that it was girl on girl, and that in our culture can't have that.
That was more stemming from the fact that was a multi-million seller game. I mean, there was a game that came out recently that had a lot of, I'm blanking on the name, but there have been games that have come out since that have had much worse. And no one said peep about
it. Dude, this game had steamy enough sex that Kanata was like, okay, let's move on. He was feeling a little uncomfortable there.
I don't know about uncomfortable.
You're feeling a little uncomfortable.
Wow.
Well, you don't like when the girl's on top. It's okay.
The game was only censored in one region, that was Australia, but people in Australia can actually purchase the game on Good Old Games,
right?
Because they don't check for region.
I'm just putting it out there as a thought, because moving to console comes with a different set of expectations, and it's a different marketplace. Just saying.
I don't know. I think that if they're coming out exclusively when they announced it on PS3 and Xbox, and now it's exclusively for the Xbox 360, they may have already had these conversations with the people that are going to be putting their game on their platform.
They want to reach the audience and make money.
Yeah, but it's not like they just were like, Microsoft's watching. They're like, is this coming out on Xbox 360? I'm pretty sure they knew it was going to happen.
I'm just like, also go back. Like, when Atari published The Witcher in North America,
yeah,
it took out a significant amount of drug reference stuff. And that then was not in back.
Right.
And it wasn't in back until the enhanced edition finally released like a year and a half later.
But that was because it had rating issues. But this game's already been rated by the ARCB. I've never seen Microsoft or any company.
Rating issues? Because the extended issue still has an M rating. So, like I'm saying, like that content still went through with an M.
No, I don't think they ever actually re-rated the game, though. That was all bonus content. They don't actually.
Oh, they escaped
DLC.
It. They escaped it by adding it on. Maybe.
So I don't know.
I mean, they did sell a box copy of extended of enhanced edition.
I just want to say that there's this part where you fall through the ground and you land in this like secret elf land with roses, and you can have sex with a girl in the water there, and then later you have this big boss fight with Letho in that same area, and you fall through the ground and you land. And I just wanted to yell at him, like, we're fighting in my sex water. Take that, bad guy. Maybe you're hard to kill, but guess what? I had sex in this water.
Dude, there's a little bit of something on the back of your thigh. Oh.
Oh, jeez.
Hey, you know, it's late in the show.
One last quick thing, though. The Xbox 360 version is going to have all of these enhancements and tweaks that the PC version has received, including the DLC, going to be added in the 360 version.
Cool.
Awesome.
And a couple of just like.
Wasn't trying to raise alarm bells based off anything. I was just, the thought came to mind. I was just wondering out loud.
No, I mean, it's a good conversation. And then Carmageddon Reincarnation. There's a new Carmageddon game coming out. It's going to be downloadable on PSN and Xbox Live Arcade. And Crimson Alliance, another game that was announced on XBLA. If you want more information about that, go to shacknews.com.
All right, folks. Now it is time. We are mere hours away from the beginning of the madness known as E3. And this is the special E3 edition of Finishing Moves.
Finishing Moves.
All right, the big three are up with their press conferences. Microsoft's finishing move is... Jeff?
Hardcore Kinect titles.
Really? Hardcore Kinect titles?
Yes.
Zav?
Beyond that, integration with games that are coming out in the future.
Integration.
Hardcore games, Kinect integration in games that are already out that we already know about.
I've walked the plank one too many times on the announcement of the next Xbox.
Whoa. What? Are you going to walk
to
the plank
not
again?
Walk the plank another time? So fuck it.
Good
planked
call.
Our audience.
Here's the thing is that like I feel like with the pressure that Nintendo ramped up so close that I don't know what they'll do, but they may feel compelled now to work in we got something coming in, maybe a video.
Boomerang controller?
No, I don't think so. and a price drop.
Price drop of the 360?
Yes.
All right.
So there you go. That's my 1-2 Xbox punch. Sony finishing move.
Zav?
I think that they are going to... I really think that, and we've talked about this before, Sony needs to get the focus away from the problems they've had and show off their new stuff. That is the NGP. Tell us what it's called. There are rumors that it's called Vita. And tell us the price. Don't make us wait till GDC or TGS. I think that people want to know more about this stuff. Let them know how, when they can get it, how much it's going to cost, and they want to see games for it.
They are going to announce the cost. My prediction is they are going to announce the cost.
Price? It's a price announcement.
Yes, okay. And it will be less than we think. It will be...
You can't go all that. You get less than what?
I think it's going to be...
comparable to the 3DS.
Yeah. I think it's going to be less than... It'd be less than $400.
There's some tech rumors floating around. Have you seen this rumor that some of the tech may have changed slightly in order to make it pare it down in price a little bit?
Yeah.
There's some rumors going around.
And I also think there'll be at least one game that nobody knows about that they've managed to actually keep a secret. And I really want to see at least a mention of Last Guardian. Come on. Come on.
It's good to want things.
Come on.
It's good to want things.
Come on.
Yeah, so for me, the Sony message is going to be twofold, and one of the things that I think that they'll come back with very strong is all of these services, because I feel like they're really glad they got the store set, because there's so much emphasis on what they're doing in the digital online space, and the NGP is so reliant on you buying into those delivered services that has to be a big deal. And then the only reason that you let the cat out of the bag on all of these big games that they have is if you've got the Haymaker coming, so they still got the Haymaker coming. I wish I knew what it was.
Yeah.
I wish I knew what it was. I'm thinking it's a 1-2 punch, and I think that they're going to fool you with like the first PS3 thing that they show you will be like something third party. It'll be really awesome, but I think there's going to be one big Sony.
Is it a franchise we know or a franchise we don't know? Or new IP?
I'm gonna say it's a new IP. I think they're going to do something. Come on, I mean, they've blown their wad on so many things. The only reason you do that is if you've still got that, you know, you still, like, yeah, we sold you some cool shit. You think that's cool?
Let me ask you this question. Are they going to mention the word Move in the press conference?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that I think is if they decide to do that, it might be like, wow, you think it looks cool now. By the way, here's Killzone. This is what Killzone looks like on the NGP. That would be really cool to really show off.
Well, there's still Resistance to come on that device, so.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying, on a technology.
It was a sad meh.
Well, that, on a technology level, they don't compare at all. Resistance versus Killzone on a technology level?
From a gee whiz, wow,
look
at that.
Talk to me after you buy your Battle for LA Blu-ray and play the demo. All right, last but not least, Nintendo finishing move. Finish them.
Nintendo, I think, has the best opportunity to win. I know we don't like talking about who won, but to win the three press conferences, because they've got the what we know will be a surprise big console announcement. I think the most fun thing of the console announcement is going to be the name of the console. And I think, of course, the controller, whatever the controller is, my hope is that the controller is none of the things we've seen bandied about, and it is something even more interesting and bizarre, and that they don't go too far down the line of appealing to the hardcore, and that they really kind of make it their own thing again.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know what, I hate to like fall in line there, but mine is like much like the Miami Heat rolling up on the Mavericks 4-1. You heard it right there. That's it.
Whoa.
4-1. This is the guys you're looking at you hear that announcement, you're like, Nintendo's like laid down the foundation with the mainstream audience with the Wii, and now they come back with an incredible piece of hardware that is exciting in the world of HD televisions that will be on a par or even above with where you're seeing the visual fidelity of the competitors out there right now, and with a unique controller in which they mac it up, you know, put it together, this entire great package, bring the third parties back, convince them all those games that you're doing elsewhere. We're going to give you the entire wealth of all these people who love Nintendo products now, and it's going to be a home run.
Let me say one more addendum to my Nintendo.
One prediction. More addendum.
I think the game that I think will be the biggest surprise of the show, and maybe it won't be a surprise, but I think the game that nobody's really talking about right now, but I think could be completely revolutionary and interesting, Mario Brothers 3DS. I think that game has a potential to be completely justify 3D technology. Mm-hmm.
And that means,
and I hope it lives up.
Zav D'Amato, so you get to bring it home for us.
I do think that those controller mock-ups all seem a little wacky, but I don't think they're going to name the system. That's something that they're going to save probably for TGS when they go home.
They don't do TGS.
All right. Well, they do their Nintendo conference they did last
Nintendo
year.
World, yeah.
So I don't think that they're going to name it, but they're going to show off, obviously, what it is. People are going to be able to play it. But I think that they are going to have every game journalist walking out of there thinking the same thing they did when they saw the DS and the same thing they did when they saw the Wii, which is they have lost their damn mind. And then we're going to get to see what it actually is about, and people are going to get a
completely controlled by a heartbeat monitor.
Yeah.
That's right.
The only
vitality sensor. It was the Trojan horse. That's the beginning right there. You hook it up to your finger. All right. So there you go. And it's also an incredible. Man. Yes.
I'm just excited for next week.
I'm excited for next week, too. And we're going to do all kinds of shows. You'll get us, of course, you can, if you have the Gamefly app, or if you don't already, go grab the Gamefly app. You'll be able to keep us up with us there. We'll be on Shaq News. We're going to have totally rad shows. You guys are doing a show every day.
Every day. Jesus. Hopefully you guys will be on them at some point.
That's absolutely. We'll definitely do that. And then the end of next week, myself and Mr. Kanata will be joined by a cast of
thousands.
Illustrious folks who you know and love well, and I'll let you all stew. You all know who's coming, so hope you'll
also
enjoy it. Johnny English will be here.
I think we should mention, because we don't often mention it enough, especially this week, you should be following all of us on Twitter. My Twitter is at Jeff Kanata with 2N1T, at Garnett Lee, at Zav.
XAV, yeah.
And we'll all be Twittering from the show, I assume.
Yes,
so that's
will.
A good way to keep tweeting up with
live.
What we're doing too.
I do want to say real quick that the thing that I love about E3 is being able to hook up with all of these great journalists and people that you don't really get to see a lot. You get to read about.
And by hook up, he means hook up.
I literally
he
mean
does.
Hook up. Wild shit going
Zav
on.
Has such a reputation.
And I do think that it's going to be real. We get bogged down in planning everything and making sure the schedules work out right, but then we kind of forget. We're going to go see E3, which is the biggest show of the year. So
yeah, it's easy to get stressed out beforehand. But
excited.
Yeah.
And
the thing that sucks the most. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was like, the thing that sucks the most about E3 is that some of my favorite people in the world are all convened in my hometown, and often don't have enough time to hang.
Oh, do we never have time
out.
To do anything?
Yeah,
it's madness. It's madness. And also, don't get lost in the madness. Remember, this is the most insane release list over an E3 season I've ever read. Hunted, Infamous 2, Red Faction, Duke Nukem, Shadows of the Damned, and Alice Madness Returns will all come out within the next 3 weeks.
So crazy.
What on earth those product teams are thinking, I don't know.
Yeah.
But you can be thinking about them and listening to us and keeping up with all of your E3 next week. We'll look forward to talking to you then. That is your Weekend Confirmed. And until next week, we are Ghost.
The new me can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. Can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. Can't stop my shine.
Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.